Thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Yeah, it's the Urban Sports Scene back live, and we are airing live. I don't have my homie Will T with me right now, but he'll be here later. But right now, I'm kind of boosted, kind of excited. I'm going to have my man Dan. I call him Dan, the scout guy. He's a baseball scout guy. He's my baseball expert, to be totally honest with you. We got to talk about some MLB playoffs, especially my Baltimore Orioles. So I'm about to cue him in right now. Dan, are you there with us? Dan.
You good?
Yes. Hey, Dan, how you doing?
Very well.
That's good. That's good. This is Dan is what I like to call our Urban Sports Scene baseball expert. You're like the best baseball mind I know. Personally, no.
Well, that's good.
But anyway, how you doing today, Dan?
Doing okay. The baseball gods were good to me. The free game finished about 5 minutes before I had to come on with you.
I missed the outcome. It was 4-4 the last time I checked. Who won?
It was men on first and second. The Giants bunted to get them over, and the pitcher chucked it down the right field line.
Oh, he choked.
Win 5-4.
Wow. Okay. So Giants up 2-1.
Razor thin margins.
Okay. It's good. I mean, you know how National League postseason is. National League NLCSs, they usually are tight, especially when those two teams get to it. But since this show is local to the DMV, the
yep.
Orioles are Baltimore. Let's talk about the Orioles real quick. The Orioles are down 2-0. To the Kansas City Royals. Why are they down 2-0? Going into this series, folks thought the Orioles were the favorites, but Kansas City looks like, you know, they look more hungry than the Orioles at the moment.
Well, I want to just kind of draw a little bit of a differentiation in between what you see all year long and what you see now. The sample size is smaller. Teams that can get on a little bit of a run and get some consistent baseball and some rhythm going. I don't want to say momentum is a thing because I don't think it is, but I think if you just, as a team, start playing your best baseball at a certain time of year. You know, last year the Dodgers were, 43-7
yes.
over a 50-game stretch in June and July. Some teams, you know, just happen to play that kind of baseball in October. And I just think that's what you're seeing from the Royals right now. I know Orioles fans hear 2-0 and they lose two games at home and they're freaking out.
Exactly, we are.
they really should. These kind of series, in better a 7-game series than a 5-game series, obviously, when you're in this position. But these series are all about making adjustments. Really, very rarely did these things get decided because the best player hits the best hitter, hits the best pitcher's pitch.
Mm-hmm.
These things are decided on adjustments, you know, who can get away from their trends. You know, the pull hitter who all of a sudden gets a couple of base hits to the opposite field. The guy who doesn't draw a lot of walks, who draws three and three nights, that kind of thing. Those, you know, a manager's adjustments. And if I want somebody making adjustments, I'd much rather it be Buck than Ned Yost.
That's true. But I had to go. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, the margins in this series are just as thin and tight as the National League series.
Mm-hmm.
And just because, you know, the Royals packed on a couple of extra runs in game two at the end, you know, shouldn't change your impression of that.
Got you. But this is my thing when watching the series. It just, to me, it just looks like the Royals bullpen is outperforming the Orioles bullpen. And those were two, obviously, these two teams had really good bullpens. But when you're in this series, only for within this short sample size, the Royals bullpen, to me, has outperformed the Baltimore Orioles bullpen. Would you agree?
I think it's hard to find somebody the Royals bullpen hasn't outperformed.
Exactly,
this year.
Exactly.
You know, there's an art to bullpen construction. And one of the things that everybody forgets is, the Royals made this trade, Will Myers for James Shields. Well, it wasn't Will Myers or James Shields. They they got Davison, Wade Davis in the trade too. Mm-hmm. And you start stacking pieces, like they're stacking pieces at the back of the bullpen, and you've got Holland, and then Davis, and Herrera, and you know all these guys that the Royals can throw out there. I mean, Danny Duffy's you know got a real good arm. You know, Jason Frazier's an experienced guy, and you know, one after the other after the other. It causes a problem at some stage.
Yeah.
Because what theoretically what you want to do, right, is knock the starter out in the fourth or fifth inning,
mm-hmm.
get into that underbelly. Well, failing that, okay, you know, the seventh and eighth inning guys on a lot of teams are vulnerable, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of what, you know, it's part of what separates the Cubs and the Brewers and, you know, the teams that aren't in the playoffs from the teams that are.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, all those guys are gone. See, you're kind of stuck trying to find a place to attack. And that's, I mean, really, you look at the numbers, and look, it is a small sample size, but a couple of hits here and there, you know, a couple of hits more from Steve Pierce, a couple of hits more from J.J. Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you know, the series could be totally different.
Of course, yeah.
It really is that tight. But getting them off the guys you're asking them to get them off of is just tough.
Yeah.
Even at home, even in that ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the benefit of being having the series now and as opposed to 40 years ago is you have all this video to work with.
So
you really get to analyze and break these guys down, and it, you know, the one thing that I see in the series
mm-hmm.
that either team could really take advantage of to win it is just who's going to work these counts.
Yes,
because you got to work these guys.
Mm-hmm.
If you put yourself in a position against a Greg Holland, against all these hard throwers, where they're ahead 0-1, 0-2, 1-2. Good luck.
Exactly. Totally agree.
Yeah, if you get yourself in 2-1, 3-1, 3-2, 2-0, that's something where you can do some business from.
Mm-hmm.
And look, really, if Lorenzo came to make that catch on that ball in the gap.
Oh my God, that was an amazing catch. And annoying at the same time, but an amazing catch.
But think about what kind of difference that makes.
Yeah, I know.
So, people in D.C., Orioles fans, take a deep breath. It's all good.
We're trying to.
This team has shown they can win on the road.
Yeah, that I do know.
And they've got good, competent management, so, you know, but you've got to win tonight.
You've got to win tonight, and I feel comfortable with tonight's starter, Bruce Chen. He's got extra rest. He's good with extra rest. I'm not Bruce Chen, excuse me. Wang Yun Chen. I said Bruce Chen. With Chen.
And
yeah, I know, right? You were with Royals.
I mean, long-time Royal, Bruce Chen.
Yeah, he was an Oriole, too. a while ago.
It's some of these guys. We were sitting around a couple of weeks ago, a couple of scouts and I, down in Pawtucket. And Ivan DeJesus' son was in.
Okay.
And we're like, oh, man, that guy played for so many teams. Like, who didn't he play for?
Exactly.
You start from there and you kind of go back. And Bruce Chen's one of those guys.
Yeah, exactly.
You pull up baseball reference and see what teams he played for and who was right and who was wrong.
Yeah. He started with the Braves, didn't he? If my memory serves me correctly.
You know what? I got my iPad right here. I'm just going to look it up.
Okay.
Keep talking.
Yeah, but for me, like looking at the Orioles situation, having Chen, a guy to me that usually, when the Orioles were on a losing streak in the season, he would always stop it. He would be the stopper. He wouldn't be the ace, but he'd be the stopper to me. So I'm comfortable with Bruce Chen. I mean, we can't call him Bruce Chen. Excuse me. Wei Yun Chen. Starting this game. Especially going against, I mean, he's a left-handed pitcher, and he can go against Alex Gordon, to me, who's an Oriole killer, and we have to go after Moustakas, who is killing at the nine hole, and Hofstner, who's hot anyway. So I'm comfortable with Chen starting in this game because one, I feel like he's a stopper, and two, I think he can quiet the left-handed bats.
The last start from Chen was not
really
indicative of his level of performance. And look, this is what you get when you have Dan Duquette. I mean, really, it would be kind of fitting that he would get a ring with this team if the Orioles were to go on and win the World Series. Because you look at the teams he had taken away from him. The 94 Expos might have been the best team I've seen in my lifetime.
Oh, yeah, I know. That team was stout. That was a very good team.
Had he been allowed to run the 2004 Red Sox, I mean, look, people up here go nuts about that. I live in the Boston area. People go nuts, before 2004. Oh, curse of the Bambino, rah, rah, rah. That curse was BS.
Yeah, I agree with you.
The only curse the Red Sox ever had was they never had enough pitching. Yeah, and Theo really didn't do a heck of a lot, but he did two very smart things. He insulated the room from all the curse grief.
Mm-hmm.
He got a bunch of guys who just didn't really care about it. And two, he went out and got Curt Schilling. All of a sudden, you get Curt and Payne. Well, no wonder.
Exactly.
Curt Schilling and Payne Martinez. You know, of course. The odds are had he been given that kind of money and that kind of leeway, he would have gone out and done something similar. You know, Dan's not dumb.
Yeah,
how many guys has he pulled out of, Miguel Gonzalez, Chen, they grab him out of, who's this guy?
Yeah.
Well, boom. Steve Pierce was a 4A guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they bring him in, they make a couple of adjustments, and all of a sudden, Steve Pierce is 20 home run, really solid DH type in your lineup, and part of the reason you got here.
Yeah, DeRosa, even in the trade down, getting DeRosa.
And Diaz has been great.
Exactly.
Especially in the playoffs.
Yeah, and look at, even though he's a star for the Orioles, and Nelson Cruz on a bargain basement deal, now you're getting to a point where you can think considering signing him on to a long-term deal. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think Duquette has done a great job as a general manager for the Baltimore Orioles. A great job. Picking up guys on, I feel like that aren't, that aren't expensive to the payroll. I'm a fan of what he's doing.
And conversely, if you look at what the Royals have done, the reason they're succeeding is that they're playing away from strength. Look, this team didn't have 800 home runs during the regular season. The guys who are killing you with homers are guys who weren't doing so in the regular season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what trend do you expect to continue?
Yeah, exactly.
They're going to pitch well,
and
they're going to try and put pressure on you, but do you think they're going to keep hitting home runs like this?
No.
If they do, God bless them. They deserve to win.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm kind of happy that we're moving away from Camden Yards because now we're in more of a spacious ballpark, and I'm looking at it this way where I feel like the Orioles' power will still travel, and I'm not sure that Kansas City's power will travel even at their home ballpark.
I agree. All right, here's your answer.
Okay.
Bruce Chen, Atlanta.
Okay.
Philadelphia for 2 years.
2 years.
Atlanta for 3. Philly for 2, the Mets for 2, Montreal for half a year, Cincinnati for a part of a year, Houston, the Red Sox, 3 years in Oreo, a Texas Ranger, and back to the Royals.
Wow.
That's a list.
That's a list. That is a list. Yeah, he's a guy that, he's a lefty. Lefties, I call him crafty lefties, can always find a job.
162 game average on Bruce Chen, 9-9 with a 4.58 ERA. Thank God for Baseball Reference.
I know our Baseball Reference does me justice all the time. I love it.
God, do you remember what we did without the internet?
Not at all.
No, I don't either.
Not at all. I can pull up any baseball stat I want to. That's what I love about it. Just to do research for the show.
anything. Just talking to people. The amount of people I talk to every day who are overseas, it's insane. Anyway, get back to what we're talking about. I go on these diversions.
No, you're cool. Hey, nice Dan, you're cool with me. Dan, you're cool with me. all right. Obviously, there was a rain postponement. Who's that favor? Because I'm trying to think. That must favor a particular team. Does it hurt the Royals because it looks like they're so hot and now they have to wait another day to play a game? Or does that hurt the Orioles knowing that, okay, now the Royals starters are kind of changed up a little to a point where now they have control of maybe pitching James Shields another day or something like that?
I'm going to go with option three and say nobody.
Nobody? Okay.
I think that a day of rest is just good for everyone at this stage. Mm-hmm. You know, you were expecting to go, to have your mind right and just, hey, all of a sudden you get the night off and you're in Kansas City and there's steak and some free time and you just kind of, you know, for the Orioles, I think you might get a little bit of a break just because they're the team on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say the same thing for Kansas City if they were in Baltimore.
Gotcha.
You know, the Royals have to deal with, you know, with their families and their friends, people looking for tickets, et cetera, et cetera. The Orioles, you know, are in a hotel someplace and, you know, on the road and away from a lot of that stuff. And if there's any little advantage, I'd probably say that's it. And look, I don't think it's going to help. I think 25 games is too much to miss at this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
to come back and be really effective right away. Okay. But hey, if there's a game six lineup, you and I both know Chris Davis is in it.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the thing. Like that's what I was going to say. When Chris Davis is activated, does he make a big difference for this team?
I would say if you can get to the World Series, your odds are better.
Okay.
Because everything that was good, but if you're a power hitter like Davis, you're generally hitting mistakes, mm-hmm. hanging curveballs, hanging sliders, you know, fastballs that are in the wrong location. If you watch anything like MLB Tonight or mm-hmm. SportsCenter, you're a regular fan of that, just watch the catcher's glove on baseball highlights
mm-hmm.
on the home runs. And watch it stab or jump back in the other direction. when a guy hits a home run, just watch the catcher's glove in the background. And it very rarely sits where it was targeted. You know, every once in a while, you know, you get a great hitter like Miguel Cabrera who hits somebody's best pitch and everybody goes, oh my God. When the reality is, home runs hit on mistakes.
Yes, that is true.
And you know, the team that takes better advantage of those mistakes is usually the winner. And, you know, to come into a Game 6 atmosphere, you know, there's no fifth starters anymore here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The Texas Ranger bullpen is not going to come in and, you know, you don't get that three games in the Texas launching pad to kind of pad your stats anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very tough environment to drop somebody who hasn't hit for a month in. And look, that whole suspension was just completely bogus.
Thank you. Ugh.
Letter of the law, sure. Spirit of the law, no.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how you do that. To, you know, if you've never had an exemption for it before.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could be a little more accepting of it,
mm-hmm.
but he had one. And this market hasn't been in the postseason since I was a senior in college, and that mm-hmm. was 97.
Yeah,
and you're
going to
take
yeah.
the best player from them?
Mm-hmm.
Over, I mean, really? It boggles my mind.
I know.
Some of the decision making.
That was annoying. Just to the point where this team was, won the AL East. And look like a team that could contend for the World Series. I'm just looking just off of this season alone, and to have that happen again to something that he was allowed to take before, and now all of a sudden, and to deal with a condition, it's amazing to me. It really is amazing to me.
Well, I mean, when you say amazing, you know, you think no Matt Wieters, they get better. No Machado, they get better.
Mm-hmm.
No Davis. They win the LDS.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's Rasputin. What do you have to do to kill this?
Exactly.
kill this team. Yeah. And if you're the Orioles, that doesn't go away because you're down 2-0. If anything, if you really believe you're that team, the Royals are right where you want them.
Right. And this is what I was saying, and this is why, to get to your point, and I was telling a friend about the Orioles. With the Tigers, when they played the Tigers, even though the Orioles were the overall, well, not the overall one seed, but they were the second seed within the AL, the Tigers were favored. People looked at the Tigers, you know, obviously with three Cy Young Award winners, probably the best hitter on the planet. You got Victor Martinez, who's an MVP candidate.
Hey, JD Martinez.
Yeah, exactly. JD Martinez looked awesome. That's the first time I actually got to see him play. So they were like the favorite to a lot of experts. And I think the Orioles had a chip on their shoulders, and they took that point. They took it to, okay, you're going to respect us. We're the underdog. We're going to play that role. Now, in the Kansas City series, with the Royals, the Orioles, everybody's picking, a lot of folks pick the Orioles to win the series. They're the favorites. And I don't see the same edge. I don't see the same edge. I don't see, like, okay, it's us against the world. When I look at Kansas, actually, to be honest with you, when I look at Kansas City, I look at the Orioles against the Tigers, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
And look, these dynamics on a day-to-day thing over 162-game grind, there's no real momentum there.
Mm-hmm.
In a playoff series, attitude matters. I'm not a huge believer in, momentum day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a believer in, having a positive attitude and going to the ballpark, thinking you can win.
Yes.
And, approaching things in that kind of professional manner. You just toss your hands up. I mean, we all know what happens then, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, you get a choice. Your back's to a wall here.
Mm-hmm.
you can fight, or you can watch Kansas City's parade.
Mm-hmm.
So, those are your choices. Really good teams react well to that. And if the Orioles aren't that team, if they really aren't that team, they'll get blown out tonight. It'll be 3-0, and everybody can go quietly into the night. But every bit of evidence we've seen so far this year, and look, Buck Showalter is no dope. If I had to take a manager of any team left in the postseason, he's it.
Yeah, and I agree. And that's the thing about, and also this is the point where I'm kind of, it's a blessing. Well, being 2-0 can actually help the Orioles too, because now I feel like they feel like they're the underdogs. Now they feel they have that role again. Okay, now, and you hear Dyson for the Kansas City Royals saying, like, we're not coming back to Camden Yards. So I feel like all that is going to put them back in the mode and to be what they were prior to this series.
Still,
mm-hmm.
when you're in this spot,
yeah.
you have to do a couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to complete this, and you're going to win 4 out of the next spot, because that's what you have to do,
mm-hmm.
You're going to have to beat Shields, and you're going to have to beat Ventura.
Exactly.
At least one of them. And probably at least one of them twice.
Ooh, yeah, that's going to be tough.
So, it's not an easy road here, mm-hmm. but at the same time, comparatively, you beat the Tigers.
the Cy Young, and, exactly.
And if you want to go, if you have to pick between Verlander, Scherzer,
Price.
Just assuming Anibal Sanchez is healthy and David Price, and, Shields, Ventura, and
Guthrie?
Yeah, the back end of Kansas. Look, we all know who we don't want to face.
Yeah, I know, right?
that's not a hard choice.
Yeah, it's really not. Yeah, exactly.
And I'm the first guy who loves Shields, and I'm the first guy who loves Ventura. But that's what you'd prefer.
Yeah.
So, as long as you keep the situation, that's what we're looking at. And look, you had good swings off these guys.
Mm-hmm.
You put X number of runs up on Ventura, you have good swings on Shields. Try and take what you did well and analyze it, make a couple little adjustments. You make sure to use the whole field and go at it that way.
Wow.
You can have some success.
So what do you think? So, all right, so what's the key for the Orioles to win tonight?
I think they need to work the pitcher. I think they need to improve their strike zone management a little bit and get themselves in some good hitting situations. I think if you do that, I think that's what you need to do, especially with the type of hitters that are at the back of your lineup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I love Scope.
Yeah.
He's, you know, we think he's a pretty good prospect. Flaherty's stepped up here.
Sure has.
In the postseason. But they're not above average hitters.
Mm, I agree.
And they need to be in good spots.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to, you know, not chase garbage. Without, you know, it's a little discipline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, narrow down your... Just because the strike zone is one thing doesn't mean that has to be your hitting zone.
Got you.
You can drive that down and throw that down and narrow it down and say, hey, middle in and down and in. You know, that's where I'm going to protect. If it's up, I let it go.
Yeah,
the way I let it go.
No, I hear you. All counts, you dictate. You find your pitch. You get that. You dictate the count. Try to dictate the count and look for your pitch when it's
look,
in your zone.
You know, look for your pitch in your zone and be disciplined.
Exactly.
And the more you can do that when the crowd gets crazy and et cetera, the better off you're going to be. Better your chances are.
And my main thing is they need to get a lead. They haven't had a lead yet. Just get a lead.
Yeah.
Put some pressure on these guys.
Hey, you know, if Kansas City's baseball plays much worse when they're down 4 runs.
Mm-hmm.
You go ahead, steal a base.
Yeah.
Good luck to you.
Exactly.
So, you know, I think that's a very good point.
You know, so, but let's go to like the NLCS. We briefly discussed it a little bit. The Giants are up 2-1. I have a question. Like, I watched the Giants. I look at the Giants roster and the injuries they have. Now they have, like, older starters now, like PV and Hudson. Like, how are they doing it? Like, how are they winning? Is it just because they have the champion spirit, or is it just managing by Bochy? I'm just trying to figure out how they do it.
They have players who know how to play these games, and it's the things that I'm talking about, strike zone management and making adjustments. And, I mean, it's something Harold Reynolds talked about a lot on the broadcast today. And look, I am the first guy who subscribes to statistics and analytics, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But what he was saying today was dead right. I mean, hey, you got all the analysis in the world. You play a certain team a couple of games, you know where guys are going to hit the ball in certain instances, in certain situations, if you pitch them a certain way. And Sandoval hit a ball down the third base line opposite field, and Matt Carpenter's standing right there and catches
mm-hmm.
it. And you just see the look in his face, like, come on, man.
Mm-hmm.
And that out was made in the dugout off charts, and they just knew, you know, where he was going to hit the ball if it was pitched in a certain spot. And that, you know, that's why I say the margins are so razor thin. And the Giants are used to playing those games. And they have pitchers. I mean, it's a little different now. Lincecum was such a force the last time.
Yeah.
Coming out of the bullpen and just, you know, the spigot goes off for 4 or 5 innings.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it really tough. You've got those players with pedigree. You've got a manager who knows how to play the game. I mean, from a situational standpoint, you got to eat that. You know, the last play of the game today, pitcher's got to eat that ball.
Exactly.
Who cares? Hey, it's a tie game. The mm-hmm. runner at first base doesn't mean
nothing.
Thing.
It's irrelevant.
All it does is help you set up and out someplace else. If you're that tight, put it in your back pocket. Hey, maybe turn around and see if the guy coming around third took too big of a lead.
Mm-hmm.
That might be your best shot in and out. And since he had to spin around and make the play, he's looking right at third base. Why not? That might be a better... You get in these situations and things get a little tight. And look, I'm not disparaging the Cardinals here. I mean, look, all their guys do is seem to come through in these spots.
Exactly.
Matt Adams, Colton Wong, because they take good approaches. And that's why the series is so tight, is all the players on both teams. And the Giants got a little lucky, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were looking for a second baseman because Scudero couldn't handle it. And they brought in Dan Ugla, and he was, you know, he wasn't doing anything. And they were forced to bring up Joe Panik. They didn't have anybody else. And he comes through. Yeah, you get a lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that wasn't designed. They weren't holding him down. I'm like, oh, you know, we've. You know, it wasn't a contract status thing. They didn't. They would have brought him up earlier if they knew he was going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, everyone talks about Tom Brady. You know, if Bill Belichick knew Tom Brady was Tom Brady, he wouldn't have waited until the sixth round.
Exactly. That'd be anything. It wouldn't. Tom Brady would be the first pick overall for Bill Belichick.
Now, you see something because you had to draft him, right?
Yeah,
you had
exactly.
to get him in your organization. You see something, but you don't know it's that.
Yeah.
And look, this guy's coming up. He's making good approaches. He's disciplined. He's centering everything. And you hit anything near second base, and it's done. It's gone.
Yeah.
Forget it.
Yeah.
So that's what the Giants are bringing to the table, and it's awfully difficult to beat a very well-disciplined team in a one-off situation.
You mentioned Joe Panik. The Nats hate Nats fans hate Panik.
Oh, sure they do.
They sure?
But I mean, hey, that series was even more thin on the margins than this series.
I know.
I mean, the Nats had every right to think they could have won that series, and there's a lot of positive signs there. They didn't pitch badly. They were very competitive pitching wise. Your best, the player who everyone thinks is your best player, as a hitter,
yeah,
stepped up huge.
Of course, yeah, he sure did. He sure did.
You know, if you get run out in three games and you're losing these games 10-1, that's a much different thing than what they. You know, they just played a very good postseason baseball team.
Yeah, and when I was having this discussion with other baseball fans, was stating like the playoff game, well, the play-in, I call it the play-in game between the Giants and Pirates. I told folks, like, even though I respect the Pirates' talent, I thought that that'd be a better matchup for the Nats compared to playing the Giants.
Absolutely.
Because the Giants are experienced; they just know how to play in this time. They just know how to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's not the ballpark advantage
exactly
with Pittsburgh either.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much you saw of the first game today, but those flags, the wind coming off McCovey Cove was just, I mean, forget about it.
Exactly.
I mean, the ball Ishikawa hit to drive in the three Giant runs in the first inning, on a normal San Francisco day, that sucker is gone. It doesn't hit the top of the wall. We're talking about it going in the cove. So it was a very, very strange atmosphere today. Guys taking some loop-de-loop routes to balls because of the wind, and very interesting atmosphere. I mean, you just wouldn't get that in Pittsburgh or Washington.
Yeah, no, it's true. So, all right. We spoke about the Giants. Let's talk about the St. Louis Cardinals. All right. So, what do you see them doing now after being just? I know it's early to being 2-1. You're in San Fran. Do you see them, the power being shipped? I'm not sure who's pitching game four. Who's pitching game four for St. Louis?
Yeah, take a peek.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Game
I should know
the,
this.
yeah, thanks a lot for throwing me into the bus.
I know, right?
I'll pull it up. What I know they won't do is panic.
Yeah, okay.
And the thing that I wouldn't do in this kind of a situation is you don't want to pitch a guy on 3 days rest.
Yeah.
And this isn't Don Mattingly criticism specifically. It isn't.
Okay.
But what you want to do is try and keep everything as normal as possible.
Totally agree.
Shelby Miller for the Cardinals, Ryan Vogelsong for the Giants.
Okay.
You want to try and keep things see, this is where the Giants have an edge. Ryan Vogelsong, postseason stats, 1.59 ERA. Overall in the postseason, Ryan Vogelsong has a 1.19 ERA. Ooh.
Hit a bad regular season, too, though. That's amazing, though, how you can just turn it on.
But, you know, guys, you get in certain situations, one-game thing, the focus is different. Some guys pitch with adrenaline better. Mm-hmm. Some guys like managing that pressure. And Vogelsong's, you know, proven that he's one of these guys. I mean, this guy was pitching overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think he was pitching in Japan. I think he was in Korea.
Yeah, it wasn't Japan.
When the Giants got him.
Yeah, it wasn't Japan.
It was either Korea or Taiwan. I forget which.
But was it Taiwan?
Maybe.
I think it was Taiwan.
The guys do go over there.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I love about all three of those leagues
mm-hmm.
is the energy.
Over.
I mean,
are the energies big? I know, Japan is pretty big.
It's huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just all three places.
Okay.
I mean, those people don't sit still. This, you know, we're not walking into Kansas City or Tampa Bay in the middle of July when there's 10,000 people there. I mean, those people came to party and make noise and, you know, put some pressure on you. It's a really great atmosphere to be around
mm-hmm.
because it's like that every day. And it's just going to be such a great thing to play in front of that every single day. Even in the big markets here, a place like Anaheim,
mm-hmm.
where they do very well attendance-wise, but it's not, you know, crazy like it is in Boston or New York, but et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
We all criticize Atlanta as a sports town.
What's the worst? It's the worst. Atlanta's the worst sports town.
but you go someplace like San Francisco or St. Louis, and it's banged out. People are there. People are into it. People stay through rain delays. I mean, can you imagine what you have to be a giant season ticket holder? You own blankets. You own jackets. I mean, it's just cold all the time in April there. I mean, it's better than Candlestick Point was, but you're still sitting on the water in San Francisco in April. It's a different level of passion, and maybe some of that rubbed off on him.
Yeah, because he's a solid postseason pitcher. But you mentioned the Dodgers now. You mentioned the Dodgers and Don Mattingly. The Dodgers just hired a new GM from Tampa. A new president. He's the president of baseball operations. But he's the GM from Tampa, Andrew Friedman. I'm not that familiar with him. All I know is that he's done good work in Tampa because Tampa gets players for cheap and always has a great team. How do you feel about that hiring?
Let's talk about Tampa Bay in general
okay.
first. Okay, they always have pitching.
Exactly.
They know how to construct the bullpen. What do the Dodgers need?
A bullpen.
It's not exactly.
And the back end of a pitch.
It's not Detroit's bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not anywhere near that level of that. They have a good arms there. It's just a question of, did the experience help them or hurt them? Will they bring in some veteran guys?
Mm.
What will he do about the excess of outfielders?
That's what I want to
know. Because it's not just Puig and Ethier and Kemp anymore. You've got Jack Peterson,
mm-hmm.
who's, you know, depending on who you talk to, the best prospect in minor league baseball. You know, top 10 on everybody's list, knocking at the door. And, you know, for a while, he's really cheap, right?
Yes.
So if you can move some assets around, which you can if you're the Dodgers, you know, I feel better about Friedman making moves with that extra space or creating extra space for himself
mm-hmm.
and bringing in guys who are relatively anonymous. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There are certain guys you feel very good about. You know, Duquette's the same way. If I hear Dan Duquette pick somebody up and they're in the lineup tonight, it's like, oh, yeah, don't worry about it.
Exactly. You have trust.
You know, it's Duquette. Nate McLaughlin. It's Steve Pierce. It's Troy O'Leary, et cetera. It's, you know, Jose Vidro. The guy's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, more likely than not. And Friedman's one of these guys. He's not going to be moved. Not that there's media pressure in L.A. comparatively to New York or Boston or Philly, but he won't be moved by any of that.
Yeah, I think
he's going to do what he thinks is right. And I think what you're going to see is more depth, more organizational depth, because that's why Tampa has been so good. It's because every time one of these guys gets hurt, it gets traded. I mean, look, David Price went out. Would I rather have David Price at what he costs or Drew Smyly at what he costs?
There you go. That's a good idea.
The answer is Drew Smyly at what he costs.
Of course. He's pitched well for him.
He's a darn good pitcher. And that's your fourth guy. You've got Archer and you've got Cobb. I mean, it's just, every time you look up, there's somebody else there.
Helixson, next to Helixson? Or Helixson, excuse me.
Helixson, I mean, it's just guy after guy. And had they been able to produce one or two more bats, you know, who knows what the story would be. But they've already done exceptionally well. And, you know, people complain up here about the Red Sox. What the Red Sox did as a model is the exact thing you should do. Like, hey, we've got all these really good young prospects. We need to find out if they can play
mm-hmm.
at this level. So we got to let them play. You got to let the pitchers learn how to make adjustments up here. And you're not doing anything with your season anyway, so let's put it to good use.
So,
and they're in a, you know, they may have finished, what, 20 games behind the Yankees, 15, 20 games
yeah.
behind the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
They are in a much better position going forward because they have all these big-time prospects who now have some experience and have learned some things. And you look at the back end of the Yankee rotate, you know, where are the young guys? They had one come up and do very well for them, but behind him, nothing.
So, all right, speaking of, all right, so my thing is I'm not a big fan of Don Mattingly. So shouldn't he just get rid of him? I know it's already rumored that he's going to get another year, but if you were Friedman, would you get rid of Don Mattingly? Because I just think he chokes on the
plate. Now, I want to couch this.
Okay.
Yes, I would, but it's because I'd want my own guy anyway.
Okay.
I don't want somebody else's guy.
Got you.
I want my guy. And I want to, you know, at the same time, I would want my scouts.
Okay.
Right? As
mm-hmm.
many of them as I could get.
Yes.
Because you have a certain amount of resources, right? Mm. If you're the Dodgers, you have more monetary resources than anyone else. Okay. That means you could, you know, you can go out and sign free agents. You have some maneuverability, and you have your draft picks just like everybody else. Now, MLB kind of restricted it. You know, the Astros will have a bigger draft pool than the Dodgers will. So you have a little bit of a restriction there, but not much. If you have it's the one place where you can really differentiate in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Because look at the Phillies. Look at the Mets. And you can insert three or four or five other teams in here in the same boat. The Angels after Mike Trout.
Mm-hmm.
The Brewers, you know, the teams who are down in the Baseball America rankings.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have as much leverage. Okay? The Rays had leverage. You always bring another guy up. You're not forced to get rid of David Price. You get what you think is a good deal for him. Right?
Yeah.
So what he'll do is he'll go through the major league roster. He'll go through the scouting department with the Dodgers, too. And he'll have some guys that he can bring in to take certain areas and ensure, give himself a better chance at having more overall leverage. Because if you're a team like that, that has that kind of resource, and you draft well, that's very dangerous. And it's an area where you can differentiate. There's no restrictions on what you can pay scouts, right?
Nope.
It's one of the few areas you can really do some damage with. And the teams that are losing, you look, a lot of the same guys have been making bad picks year after year, and, there are guys who've, been in scouting their whole lives and don't really have much to show for it in terms of, I drafted it. And, look, some of that's because of small sample size. They're in a region you don't necessarily take guys at the top of the draft, so your odds go down. But, the good ones get players.
Mm-hmm.
They find a way.
Their numbers
come up. If they're in a place for 7-8 years, they have some guys to show for it.
And I honestly think the Dodgers are in good hands with this move, because like you said, they have to me they have so much talent. They're a team that I feel like that should be in the World Series. I'm not gonna say win, but should definitely be in the World Series. And I think with a smart acting general manager or president of baseball operations, they can definitely be on their way. I'm with you. I believe he can build the bullpen. He has a track record with it. They specialize over there in Tampa, and I think he'll bring that over here with the Dodgers. But real quick, Dan, we're about to change segments. But before anything, do you tell people how to reach you and what you do and all that good stuff?
I'm at Loon Baseball on Twitter. Right now, I don't know what the heck I'm doing.
Dan, you do a lot.
I'm up for some life change right about now.
I hear you.
I'm going to interview for a couple of baseball jobs, but if anybody's out there, you're listening, you have a Twitter account, please follow me at Learn Baseball. It will really help. The more followers I can get, the easier I can get published.
Of
and
course.
I love talking to people, too. So, like I said, that would really help me out. So, at Learn Baseball on Twitter.
All right, Dan, I'm on a mission. I'm going to get you more followers on Twitter. That's my mission.
Call me anytime, all right?
All right,
I'm always here for you.
All right, cool. I'm going to get you more followers on Twitter. That's my mission now. That's my mission.
Thanks, brother.
No problem. All right, Dan, thanks again.
Cheers.
Cheers. But that was my man, Dan. Cool guy. Again, follow him on Twitter. His Twitter account is at Learn Baseball. All baseball fans, please check him out. Dan is so so smart when it comes to baseball. I thought I knew a lot about baseball. He knows way more about it. He knows minor league. He knows about minor league players. He knows how to scout a pitcher. Know if a pitcher is going to be. You get a young pitcher and see if he's going to make it to the next level. He knows it all. But anyway, it's about time for another commercial. It's about time for a commercial break. When we get back, we'll be talking about the Redskins' terrible loss to the Arizona Cardinals with a bummed arm, Carson Palmer. My team sucks, but there's hope. RG3 is around the corner, so we don't have to hear about Kirk Cousins anymore. It's the Urban Sports Saint for ages. You dig?
I'm Peyton Manning. On the football field, I always have to prepare for the unexpected. My teammates and I train to think fast and be ready ahead of the game. You can be ready with the help of your local American Red Cross. The American Red Cross can help all of us prepare for life's emergencies. Take life-saving CPR or first aid courses. Make an emergency plan or learn how to build a disaster supplies kit. Contact the American Red Cross today.
Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org to learn more.
This one's for you and me, living out our dreams. We're all right where we should be. With my arms out wide, I open my eyes. Is a sky full of lighters, a sky full of lighters.
By the time
time you hear this, I will have already spiraled up. I would never do nothing to let you cowards f*** my world up. If I was you, I would duck or get struck like lightning fighters. Keep fighting, put your lighters up, point them skyward, Had a dream, I was king, I woke up, still king. Snap canes, nibble is mine for the milk king. Till nobody else even f***ing feels me, till it kills me. I swear to God, I'll be the f***ing illest in this music. There is or there ever will be. Disagree, feel free, but from now on I'm refusing to ever give up. Only thing I ever gave up's using. No more excuses, excuse me if my head is too big for this building. And pardon me if I'm a cocky, but you c***s are slick. Popping s*** on how you flipped your life around. Crockers, who you t- trying to kid? Flip, you the opposite, you stay the same. Back with the still c***, you I love it when I tell him shove it, cause it wasn't that long ago when Marshall said busted black luster, cause he couldn't cut mustard muster up. Nothing brain fuzzy, cause he's buzzing. Woke up from that buzzing. Now you wonder why he does it, how he does it. Wasn't cause he had buzzard circled around his head, waiting for him to drop dead. Was it, or was it cause some bitches wrote him off? I guess it doesn't matter now, cause
this one's for you and me, living out our dreams. We're all right where we should be. If my arms are wide, I open my eyes, and now all I wanna see.
We're back from commercial break. Actually, I am back from commercial break. Still waiting on my homie Will T. But let's do a couple of reads before we get into our Redskin talk. You can listen to us on our official Urban Sports Scene website, which is www.walio.podbeam.com. Podbeam is spelled podbean.com. Walio is spelled Waleo. We are also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. Also, you can catch me on Thursday nights on the Sports Crib podcast show at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Stiller Fan. The show was produced by West Coast Stiller Fan. All right, folks, our phone lines are open. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. All right, Redskins and Cardinals. Well, let me give you my thoughts on the Redskins offense in this game. The Redskins lost this game with poor play, with poor coaching, to me, in my opinion. You see the Dallas Cowboys, who are our arch rivals right now, winning games because they stick to the run. They're not putting Tony Romo in a situation where Tony Romo has to do all the work and create turnovers or mess up Tony Romo being Tony Romo. But for us, the Washington Redskins, what we're doing is instead of using Alfred Morris, the guy who's got 1,500 yards, I don't care if the running game's not working. I don't care if he's averaging 2.3 yards a game. This guy needs to get touches. Give him the damn ball. Continue to run Alfred Morris like them 30 carries. If you watch that Cowboys Seahawks game, DeMarco Murray was getting stopped. He had 20 carries, about 60 yards or 68 yards. That's below 4 yards a carry, which is a good game for running backs. That's below. So he's below a good game for running backs in a game in terms of yards per carry. You're not. So Alfred Morris was getting stopped by Arizona. Yes, he was getting stopped, but you feed the beast. You give Alfred Morris enough carries to a point where he can start knocking down big runs. That's what happened in the Dallas game. You see, and eventually DeMarco Murray started getting his momentum, and he got like a 15-yard run, a 20-yard run. He started to get in the rhythm. You have to do the same thing with Alfred Morris. And in this game, they didn't. You're trying to showcase Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is who we thought he was. He is an erratic quarterback. He freezes under pressure. I've been saying it from week to week that this guy chokes under pressure. And we consistently give this individual like all the shots in the world to show us that he's like supposed to be like Dan Marino. He's not Dan Marino. He's not Peyton Manning. He's Kirk Cousins. All right. He's a backup quarterback. And to me, this dude's like has definitely lost his dropped his stock just like last year. Last year, we wanted to build Kirk Cousins into something else. We're going to give him all these games to showcase him so that he can show us and show the league that he's worth some type of high draft pick. Well, what he showed us this season is the same thing from last season. You give him an opportunity. He came in. He did well against the Eagles. He did well against Jacksonville on like coming out the bullpen. Against the Eagles as a starter, came in, did okay. No, he played well to the fourth quarter and he choked. He is not, in my opinion, a starting quarterback. He's a backup quarterback. He's a very, very good backup quarterback. Now, I could be wrong. There may be Kirk Cousins fans out there that can say that believe that Wally, you're out of control right now. But in my opinion, he showed me who he was. All right. We need to win. Arizona was a winnable game. That was a very winnable game. And I'm very disappointed in Jay Gruden for continually putting the pressure on Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins doesn't deserve isn't at the level to be getting that. He is not RG3. RG3 got this team to the postseason. All right, as a rookie, we went 10-6, won the NFC East. All right, Kirk Cousins as a starter is 1-6, I think, as a starter. There's a big difference. All right, there's a big difference. This guy is not a winner in the NFL right now. He is not a winner. And we have to me, arguably one of the more talented duos at running back. I have a lot of respect for this backfield of Roy Helu and Alfred Morris. You give, to me, in my opinion, you get Alfred Morris 25 to 30 carries, give Roy Helu 10 to 15, and that's run play action. That's run play action. And then you can hit DeSean Jackson deep for a touchdown. You can hit DeSean Jackson on screens. Teams will now be scared and they'll bring eight in the box. We'll see more one-on-one coverage. There's nobody in the world that can, no linebacker in the world that can check Jordan Reed man up, period. Like, period. And for us to struggle against a team that pretty much showed us, okay, we're just going to blitz them all day. And there were plays to be had, big plays to be had all day with the talent we have in the skill position, and to struggle against this team. And let me get to that alone. Like, DeSean Jackson running into his own man, that annoyed me because that was points off the field. Again, not like even Niles Paul not being able to block is like annoying to me. Then you consistently play Tyler Palumbis, who you can just you might as well, in my opinion, just play Morgan Moses. I don't care if Morgan Moses sucks right now. I don't care. I'd rather have him and let him, you know, learn and be physical than have Tyler Palumbis, who gets pushed back like a soft right tackle. Like, he's the softest tackle I've ever seen. He gets pushed back with ease. He has no fight in him. So I just want to see. Like, for me, like, the Redskins offense really annoyed me. Like, it really annoyed me. This is a team offensively that should be better. Again, Roy Helu, Alfred Morris, those are your running backs. Pierre Garçon, DeSean Jackson. Those are your wide receivers. Tight ends. Jordan Reed, who to me, again, that we saw is unguardable. There's no linebacker or even cornerback can check this man. And then you have Niles Paul, who showed us in games when Jordan Reed went down to be an explosive player. We can't score on this team. It's ridiculous. And going back to what I mentioned earlier, the trade value of Kirk Cousins' trade value is down now. Like, now Kirk Cousins is what? What would you get for Kirk Cousins? Like, what would you receive for Kirk Cousins in terms of the trade? I mean, seriously, like, Kirk Cousins is worth what? A fourth round pick? Nah, not even that. A fifth round pick? Nah. Sixth round pick, maybe. Like, we're looking at a guy that everybody touted better than RG3. Like, Joe Theismann came out of his mouth and was like, okay, there's a quarterback. It shouldn't be a quarterback controversy because Kirk Cousins is the better quarterback. What did Kirk Cousins show us? What did Joe Theismann see in preseason to say that? It's preseason. Playing against backups. What did Joe Theismann see? Because I know what I saw last season is what, in a regular season, Kirk Cousins showed me who he was. But Joe Theismann saw something totally different. We're talking about an all-time great Washington Redskins quarterback came out and said RG3 shouldn't be the starting quarterback for this team. Sonny Jurgensen said the same thing, like, Kirk Cousins is the better quarterback. Sonny Jurgensen is the same dude that said that Jeff George is probably better than Brad Johnson. We listen to these people. The fans listen to these people. It makes no sense. My man, did the Patriots get for Ryan Mallett? Oh, okay, my man Pedro said, what did the Patriots get for Ryan Mallett? He said, I think Kirk Cousins is worth a seven. I agree, probably six or seven. Pedro, thanks for the Instagram thing. I think he's worth the seven myself. He's not. He definitely ain't worth the. Again, he's not worth what people thought he was going to be worth. We had people say he's worth a second round pick. It's amazing, man. It really is. This whole thing is amazing. The Kirk Cousins lovers is amazing. It was amazing to me. And now, now all the Kirk Cousins supporters are quiet. They're not saying a darn thing. They don't believe in him anymore. Why? I mean, if he's so raw, maybe he's having a bad stint. Or maybe you know that he sucks. There's one thing I'll say. There's a blessing in this whole thing with Kirk Cousins. It's now that I think everybody can appreciate what RG3 did for this team, a healthy RG3 did for this team. And honestly, even hurt, and if you really pay attention to RG3, even when he was hurt, there's one thing. When he didn't play good in quarter one or quarter two or quarter three, you did know in the fourth quarter when he was in the game, he fought. He did whatever it took for his team to compete. There's games like we played the Eagles on Monday night. Folks are like, oh, they're blowing y'all out. But you would come back in the fourth quarter, though, whatever it was, like even though the Eagles could have been playing prevent or whatever, he was fighting in that last quarter. Like RG3 gives you an opportunity to win games in the fourth. Do not get it twisted. He gives you an opportunity. Kirk Cousins doesn't. And I know I'm going on this RG3 Kirk Cousins, you know, comparisons, but it really annoyed me back then when everybody was on Kirk Cousins' bandwagon. Had my own brother would text me, was like, Kirk Cousins is the better quarterback. I just laughed. Because Kirk Cousins, I've seen Kirk Cousins is Michigan State. I watched him in the NFL with the Redskins. He is who I thought he was. Now, he's only worth like a seventh round pick, in my opinion, if that. My man, what my man Pedro saying now? Hold on. He said he can be development to an elite quarterback. He needs coaching. Hey, Pedro, who you talking about, though? Who needs to be development to an elite quarterback? You talking about RG3? You talking about Kirk Cousins? Let me know. You can call in, dude. Don't be scared, man. 202-495-0904. Oh, he's saying Kirk. Nah, Kirk cannot be an elite quarterback. Not at all, Pedro. No, not at all. Not at all. Not. No, can't. Can't do it. Can't win with him, homie. Can't win with him. Can't win with him. It's either you got the dog in you or you don't. That Bama don't got the dog. Bama means punk or loser. That dude don't got the dog. He don't got the dog. So, I mean, but I just want to talk to y'all Kirk Cousins fans out there. Like, this dude ain't there. He ain't for it. He's not a winner. All right? He's not a winner at all. The man isn't pretty. He's a backup quarterback, if that. I want to see Colt. I truth be told, I want to see Colt McCoy. I'd rather see Colt McCoy. Hey, my homie Will T here. Say what's up to the people, Will.
What's going on?
I'm out here just, you know, getting mad at Kirk Cousins.
Why would you be getting mad at Kirk Cousins?
Because not Kirk Cousins, the person or the quarterback himself, but Kirk Cousins and the fans that came out with him. Like, now I see Joe Theismann annoys me. Sonny Jurgensen annoys me.
Okay, let me ask you this. Why would Joe Theismann annoy you if he gave his honest assessment of what he saw going on in practice in the preseason?
Because his honest assessment is BS. He's like, for me, the people like Joe Theismann, Sonny Jurgensen, these are the same folks that said Jeff George is better than Brad Johnson. Same individuals who are enamored with the arm. Enamored. See, the thing about it is like...
Go ahead. I don't think you'll be far-fetched to find anyone who will... honestly say from a skill perspective that Jeff George is not better than Brad Johnson. Jeff George had the stronger arm, even though Brad Johnson was a better he read defenses better, he was far more accurate, he was able to kind of come to the line of scrimmage and know where he was going with the ball and make his progressions better than Jeff George. But I think as a thrower of the ball and with arm strength, Jeff George was better than Brad Johnson.
As a thrower, but not a better quarterback.
Yeah. I didn't say quarterback. Yeah, quarterback was not the words I said. Yeah, I said a better thrower of the ball. Yes, Jeff George had more talent.
Yeah,
but Brad Johnson was the better overall quarterback.
Yeah, that's my thing. Sonny Jurgensen was one of the main culprits that said that, all right, that Jeff George is better than Brad Johnson. He said it. This is what Sonny Jurgensen preferred Jeff George over Brad Johnson.
Okay.
All right. So, for me, like, these are the same people that said Kirk Cousins is a better quarterback than RG3, which was false to me. Because you can't, again, he showed me who he was last season. Let's go to this season. He's shown me who he is this season. RG3 regardless of what people want to think of him, I have my own criticism of RG3. To me, as a pocket passer, there's something he can work on. I mean, pocket awareness is what I call it. Pocket awareness, there's something he can learn and something he needs to improve on. But that's my only true flaw with him. Progressions, I think he can get that. I'm not really worried about his progressions. But in terms, but one thing he does have for him, I know that when RG3 is on that field, that dude is going to do whatever it takes to win. And I don't think he won't choke. He doesn't choke.
Well, we've had this conversation on the show, and we both agree that Kirk Cousins was the better NFL passer.
Yeah, I said better pocket. I said pocket quarterback. That's why I said pocket. I didn't say passer. I said pocket.
No. We said, better quarterback. We said RG3 is the better passer because of his arm strength.
No, I said RG3 is the better. Continue.
No, I'm just saying, both of us agree to. And you know,
I don't agree.
We could rewind the tape.
I know what I said. I know exactly what's going on. I'm gonna let you continue.
No. Now, granted, Kirk Cousins hasn't produced when he's needed to produce, which has been over these he started 6 games.
If you go from last year and this year, I thought he's 1-6. He's 1-5.
Last year and this year.
As a starter, I believe he's 1-6 as a starter.
Okay, well, 7 games.
I think it's 1-6. I could be wrong.
But there are a couple things you got to take into account. Has Kirk Cousins been very flawed during his stretches as the starting quarterback for Washington? Absolutely. He stares down his receivers. Some of his passes outside of the numbers, have been been shaky at best. But you got to take into account the things he does do correctly, which is he knows where to go with the ball on the blitz. He knows where he wants to go pre-snap. He makes his progressions. But his offensive coordinator and head coach haven't put him in the best position to win. They haven't used the run game. They haven't used read option. Last time I checked, Kirk Cousins is pretty – I'm not saying he's a great athlete. He's nowhere the athlete that Robert Griffin is, but he's pretty nimble with his feet. We saw what he did that one game, that first play, the read option. I think, was it the Giants?
Yeah.
When he used the read option, kind of set everything up for him and made him look pretty decent during the first quarter and the first half. I just don't think that his offensive coordinator and his head coach have put him in a position to maximize his talents. But I also say that we are seeing how flawed that Kirk Cousins is, and he's limited in some scope.
I agree in this regard, and it's the only reason why I agree. I think that they did the same thing with RG3 to a certain extent. Well, no, I take that back. In the game against the Texans, they did what they were supposed to do. You're supposed to now. I said this earlier. You run Roy Helu, you run Alfred Morris, you do what the Cowboys did. Again, Pedro, I'm referencing your team again. You do what the Cowboys are doing now with the run game. With Seattle was shutting them down. Look at DeMarco Murray's stats before he broke through. He had 20 carries, about 64 yards. That's what? An average like 3 yards a kick. That's 3-point-something yards.
True.
Which is bad. Truth be told. When you average out, it's bad. But they were persistent. They was like, screw that. We're going to still run.
Yeah, but running the ball is a mentality.
Yeah, it's a mentality, yeah.
Certain teams, you know, I believe Alfred Morris carried the ball 13 times. That's not a mentality of wanting to be physical and running the ball. Second of all, we all know Jay Gruden's resume. We've seen what he wants to do as an offensive coordinator. He wants to do 60-65% pass, 35% run. So you can't be mad because, you know, when I recall, there's a guy who the previous administration, a lot of people wanted them to go. I personally said that you should stay that route, even though I know why you had to let him go, just because of the friction between him and the your franchise quarterback.
You're talking Mike Shanahan?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad he's gone. I'm not even worried about that.
No, but if you look at what – and we can have this is a discussion for later. I think a lot of the wrongs that people blamed on the Shanahans, you're seeing now that he wasn't totally crazy.
Wrong with what?
I mean,
what's the wrong?
I mean, just his play calling, you know.
His play calling still sucked. I don't really understand.
Well, you can't say that because his son's gone off to Cleveland. Just look what he's done.
His son?
His son called the plays last year.
It's always good 1 year. Year two is always going to change. The defense is getting smarter.
I mean, you could say that, but he's doing it with a quarterback that no one would – I don't think anyone going into the season would deem that quarterback as a starting NFL quarterback.
But we don't have – but like, I'll put it this way. He doesn't have his quarterback. Jay Gruden doesn't have his quarterback. He doesn't have his quarterback healthy. So I can't really give you – I can't tell you, all right, well –
he won with Andy Dalton.
Jay Gruden's quarterback is RG3. Andy Dalton was a second-round pick. He was a second-round pick. He was deemed to be one of the better starters in that draft.
Okay.
I'm just saying. He was deemed – and Andy Dalton –
all I can say is he won with Andy Dalton.
To be honest with you, if you really want to be real with it, other than the game against the Patriots, Andy Dalton's been good without Jay Gruden, if you want to be real.
Yeah, because they're using that run game to set up everything.
So you can't say he just had Andy Dalton. He's good without Andy Dalton. He's good without Jay Gruden. Andy Dalton has been good this season.
He's been decent.
He's been good.
He's been decent.
Look at the stats. He's been good.
He's been decent.
Look at the stats.
Okay.
I'm just saying, look at the stats. He played without AJ Green yesterday. I think they scored about 30 some odd points.
Yeah, against the Carolina Panthers.
Well, I'm just saying, without their number one. Andy Dalton is a good quarterback. I'm not saying he's elite, but he's a good quarterback. So Jay Gruden is not like, at first, folks like Jay Gruden made Andy Dalton. He didn't make Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton's still putting up numbers. Be honest with you, Andy Dalton looks better with this regime than he did with Jay Gruden.
Yeah, because their emphasis is on the run.
I'm just saying, Andy
Dalton. I understand where you're coming from. But no, go ahead.
I'm getting called by something. I can't tell who this is. It could be some. It could be like people looking for me. Hold on, let me check this call.
Okay,
go ahead.
No, but I think that Andy Dalton. Okay. Andy Dalton is a decent quarterback. I'm not saying he's elite, you know.
All right. Always getting callers, man. Got a caller with Urban Sports. Caller with Urban Sports saying hello.
This is George in North Carolina just called into the show.
Hey, George, what's going on?
How you doing, George?
Hey, I don't want to say what you were saying about them not running the ball before your partner came in was so right on the money, and it would have been one of the things I was going to talk about if you hadn't mentioned it too. And I'm 100% with you on that. And I want to throw this in there too, that we're at this point 1-5. The Redskins are. We're evaluating the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. So for me, I don't want to rush RG3 back for two reasons. Yeah. One, we've already done it once before, and it's been a disaster. Mm-hmm. And he needs to be as close to 100% as possible so that we can evaluate him going forward and say, can he be that quarterback he was? Because you got to make a decision on him and Kirk Cousins this year. You can't go in next year with a lame duck quarterback. Mm. That's a recipe for a complete nightmare. And I think you have to consider the possibility that maybe neither of them are worth going forward or worth going with going forward, and you have to look at quarterback at the top of the draft next year.
Ooh, say Jameis Winston or Mariota?
I was going to say, or Everett Golson for Notre Dame, who will be draft eligible. And let me tell you something. I've seen him, and I'm going to watch him real close when he plays Florida State, but I watched a lot of him against Stanford, mm-hmm. and they struggled. Stanford's got a great defense, but a lot of things about Everett Golson I like, from the physical skills, but also, again, leadership, on the field, poise, that sort of thing. And I think Jay Gruden would like to work with a quarterback like Golson, who, yes, he can run around, but he also likes to stay in the pocket a lot more than, say, Robert does.
Yeah, I'm not going to – actually, to be honest with you, in watching Golston over the last couple of years, his first year in Notre Dame, I wasn't a big fan of him. I've seen him now this season, and I was impressed. I'm a Michigan fan. I was impressed when I saw what he did to Michigan. No, Michigan's defense is a joke, but still, I was impressed with it. I'm a big believer in RG3. I'm still a big believer in RG3. Kirk Cousins to me has shown us pretty much what he is at the moment. I'm not saying he can't get better, but I'm a fan of patterns, and to me, he's shown us a pattern. He's like, he's up and down, up and down. I feel like...
And I don't disagree with you. Yeah. I completely agree with you on that. And again, I want to give Cousins a few more games to maybe show us if something can be better, but I think we're getting the whole picture on him. Yeah. My thing with RG3 is this. I do not want to be like Cincinnati and Chicago and some of these other franchises that have given the King's Ransom, Keys to the Castle kind of money to quarterbacks who've done absolutely nothing in the playoffs.
Got you.
Andy Dalton's got no playoff wins. Jay Cutler's got two. and somebody else got a bunch of money that's got one playoff win. And I don't think the Redskins can do that. And, I mean, to me, if Robert plays the last 5 or 6 games and he doesn't show that he can get back to where he once was, then we've got two options. It's either see if he'll take a short-term extension that's basically, okay, you're our guy, but you got to prove it, and if you prove it, then we'll give you the big money, or trade him and get him out of here and look at a quarterback next year. Because I'm with you on Cousins. I think we're going to find out whenever Robert gets back, we're going to look at the whole picture and say, you know, he's played about a season's worth of football now between all the relief appearances and starting, and it's not what you, again, like you say, a serviceable, handy backup quarterback. That's what he is right now and probably what he is for the foreseeable future.
Do you want to say something, Will?
No, I agree for the most part with what he said. I do think that for everyone who's saying that they think that the Washington is going to invest another high draft pick in another quarterback, you're crazy. Just because of the sunken cost of what they've invested in the Robert Griffin III. And then also you also have to realize this owner, he wants a charismatic leader of his franchise. And he has that. And we all know that this owner isn't afraid to overspend for people that he perceives can be marketing tools for him, i.e. look at what he did this past offseason with Arakpo.
What do you mean, Arakpo? What about Arakpo?
Arakpo's a guy who's not afraid to be in front of the camera. Look at the commercials he's done locally.
Oh, my God. Arakpo is so not even the same. It's not even the same.
Well,
I said RG3, I'll give you the market. Arakpo is not even marketable. You can't even marketable. You can't market.
Yeah, the guy's been marketable in the D.C. area.
Anybody, you can market anybody with some...
Not anyone.
The cavemen do the work.
He's done a lot of local advertising.
I'm a supporter of Brian Arakpo. I am done supporting Brian Arakpo.
Now you finally learn.
I am so done. But I'm gonna go back to my man George real quick. This is one thing I'll say, George. Because of the poorest defense, If Jameis Winston was an option, I would really think about it. Because that's the only quarterback I feel like that is a transcending quarterback. That's a quarterback that I feel like could be an elite quarterback in a couple years. I mean, obviously he's immature as hell, but still, that's a quarterback that I can see.
Here's the problem. There's one problem with that. This organization has not got a winning culture, and you're going to throw Jameis Winston, who's got issues, let's just put it that way, at the moment. You're going to throw that quarterback into this situation?
I wouldn't want to.
No, me neither. And the thing about it is, think about this with Golson. Mm. If Notre Dame ends up in the national title game again, or the national playoffs again, which is a very real possibility, you're going to be talking about a guy who's been in the national title game as a freshman, missed a year, come back, hasn't missed a beat, and might be in the playoff again. I mean, that's a record that says to me, okay, this young man has got something special about him. And the thing about it is, I'm wondering, with given all the stuff that's gone on the last few years, if we need to cut ties with as much of it as we can. Mm. Not everybody, because we got some good players on this roster, but people like Hall, Arakpo, Merriweather, and some of these other guys, get him out of here. And kind of start over, because we got a coach in his second year who's good with working with quarterbacks, we think. And if there's a quarterback in that draft he likes, he shouldn't be afraid to do it, because, look, you're right about the defense and you're right about the issues we got there.
Well, George, let me ask you.
We can get something for some of these quarterbacks we have now. Maybe not as much as we'd like, but we can get something for them.
George, let me ask you a question. As a Washington fan, aren't you tired of hitting the reset button? Aren't you tired of flushing the toilet every 2 to 3 years?
I am, but we haven't hit the reset button. We've kept.
You just hit the reset button with Jay Gruden. You just brought in another coach. That's what I'm saying.
I mean,
you keep every 2 or 3 years, this franchise continuously resets by bringing in another coaching regime, starting over with another coach, saying that we're going to improve the culture. But the reality is they haven't had anyone to set a culture shock, because the only way you can affect and change culture is it has to start from overhead. It has to stop at the ownership. And I really don't see that happening.
Well, this is one thing
I agree with you, but I would say that We did reset with the head coach, but a lot of the same staff was kept around, and that's something I didn't understand.
Well, that goes to culture, because you're not truly empowering your coach. If you want to empower, you have to give a coach the authority to be able to be successful. For you to come in and state that, okay, we want to hire you as a head coach, but you need to keep these guys to make this guy. No, you're not setting yourself. You're not really changing the culture, because you have guys
100% right.
from the last regime when things weren't correct. Now, if you really want to hit the reset button again, which most likely will happen in another 2 or 3 years, just realistically, if you keep getting the same results, you gotta. No, I mean,
I don't think this is one thing I do agree with George. I don't think we really truly hit the reset button within like certain players. Like, if it was a true reset button, I'll be honest with you, the true reset button, D. Hall wouldn't be here. He wouldn't be here. Merriweather wouldn't be here. Arakpo wouldn't be here. You know what I mean? You would get some of these guys who haven't won here, who haven't done anything to build a culture of winning. That would be a true reset. And then just go with the whole young nucleus. The problem I had an issue with, even with the Shanahan regime, they wanted to keep people like D. Hall. To be honest with you, I've never been a big fan of D. Hall. Even though last season he had a good year, you keep a player like D. Hall, a guy who will, as you see, even on game day, will give you a costly 15-yard penalty. For what? Because he's an emotional. Because he has so much passion. But he's the kind of vet you don't keep on your team. If you want a real reset, you get people like that off your team. Like, I like Arakpo, but be honest with you, you could have got rid of him too. You know what I mean? That's a true reset to me. You're trying to keep players on the team because you don't want to look bad and say they flamed out. You didn't do right in drafting this player or signing this player.
But that all goes to the culture. You're not empowering your coach. You're not giving him the authority to say, okay, I want these guys. This is my staff. These are the guys that I want. These are the players that I want, my type of players. I don't want the type of players that were in here on this previous regime who've become accustomed to collecting a check and losing. That's what I'm saying. It's a culture thing. You're not going to ever find, until Daniel Snyder and Bruce Allen bring in a guy who's going to be able to build this thing, his program, from scratch, from the ground up, you're going to continue to get the same results over and over and over again. You might have a glimpse of winning every now and then, but realistically, you're not going to be able to sustain winning seasons.
Oh, real quick. So you're trying to say you think this guy should be signing players? Should he be evaluating?
Ultimately, a coach shapes his roster. I don't know one NFL coach who doesn't have a say in which players are on the roster.
Okay, that's true.
Now, the scouting department and the GM, they go and find the type of players that he likes. Yes.
Yeah.
But there isn't one coach who really doesn't have final word over who makes that 53-man roster.
But this is my thing. We keep mentioning Daniel Snyder. Daniel Snyder is not involved in the signing, involved in finding or assessing talent. He's not in that situation. He's not in that. This is not the same Daniel Snyder. That's not even part of the whole equation. What's going on right now is obviously Scott Campbell and Allen. These are the individuals who are finding players. Now, I'm not sure how the inner works with Jay Gruden. Jay Gruden is talking to them about, okay, should I get this player and whatever? Because we do know if it's Daniel Snyder, if he's making moves, we'd be having more high price free agents. All right. So this is my thing. So I think we've already changed the culture. If you want to compare it to what we've been like 2-3 years ago, we've changed the culture. The culture's changed. Now it's about really doing right and finding the correct talent. But I think the culture's changed. We don't have the same culture. It's totally different.
Nah, I totally disagree.
What player have we signed and is a high marked player?
Arakpo, you just gave him $11 million.
A 1-year deal.
You gave him $11 million. Hold on. This is the thing. Hold on. You asked me a question and I'm replying.
Go ahead.
You gave $11 million to a guy who has never been an upper echelon, top-tier pass rusher. You just don't make those. I don't care if it's one year. I don't care if the smart franchises don't make those mistakes.
If you look at the salary cap, it plays for the salary cap. You were going to give him that 1 year. That's the only player you're probably going to get anyway. Gave him 1 year for $11 million. Take it off the books. It's off the books for next season.
But that's the thing. You have to continue. You got to restart again.
To be told on that market, but what you're referring to, even on that market, teams were about to try to hire him, get Arakpo on that type of contract anyway.
So
you
basically,
signed him for 1 year.
So basically, you're saying you signed him because there were other teams that outside that were going to sign him for that money.
No, you signed him because you didn't know you're going to change your defensive scheme. Supposedly, you're going to change your defensive scheme and you're going to utilize him the way he was supposed to be utilized, whatever it meant. So you gave him the opportunity because you franchised for 1 year to do what he had to do. That's 1 year. Now, if you want to go with the old regime, Arakpo wouldn't have been franchised. He would have got a long-term deal, and then we would look like Bobo the Fool. We only gave him 1 year.
Still look like Bobo the Fool because you gave a guy $11 million who is not a difference maker. You give a guy $11 million who's not a difference maker.
This is what we did, and this was a smart thing. We said, okay, Brian Arakpo, we're going to give you 1 year for $11 million. We're going to draft Trent Murphy, and if you don't pan out, Trent Murphy will take your job next season. We prepared a plan for Brian Arakpo if he didn't look good. We prepared a plan. The plan was Trent Murphy. Trent Murphy will be the player next season. They have a plan.
Why waste a year?
No, it's not wasting a year.
It is wasting a year.
Because Trent Murphy is playing. He's not wasting a year.
No, this is what you're not listening to what I'm saying.
You're not listening to what I'm saying.
I am listening to you say. I've listened to everything you said. My thing is the smart franchises. If you have a guy who you deem or you think is or who's projected himself as an elite pass rusher, mm-hmm. and who has never proven it, they say, okay, you think you're an elite pass rusher? Go out and do it somewhere else. Because we know here in this building, mm-hmm. you haven't produced that.
Yeah.
So why give him $11 million hold on.
I'm not saying anything.
If you believe in your scouting in your personnel department and you think that Trent Murphy is the future, then you would have easily saved $11 million and you could have used that $11 million towards other needs because you already know that Arakpo isn't that guy. He hasn't shown you anything over the tenure of his career to be that guy.
Let's be real. Okay, anytime you average, we've had this argument before. Anytime you average 10 sacks, you can get 10 sacks.
He hasn't averaged 10 sacks.
He has. We already did this already.
No,
it's like 9.5.
That's not 10.
Or whatever.
If you're going to say 10 sacks,
estimated,
then tax, then
like,
10
like
sacks.
When you're in school, right? When you're in grade school, it's a 9.5. What do? You round up to the nearest whatever.
No.
It's like 10 sacks.
No, he's averaged under 10 sacks. Right, he hasn't averaged 10 sacks.
Let me finish my
story. Okay, go ahead.
Basically, 10 sacks. I basically averages about 10 sacks. You're going to say, okay, Jim Hasley came out and said, you know what? I'm going to utilize you different, and this was going to happen. It didn't happen. Whatever. But you had Trent Murphy as a backup plan. I didn't say they thought Trent Murphy was going to be the next big thing, but they have him as a backup plan. Said, okay, we'll just go ahead and keep a cheap Trent Murphy. We'll give you 1 year, and if you do ball out, and you do get 15 sacks or whatever, because it's a contract. You know how players spend their contract year. We'll keep you. If you don't, we won't. Because we want to keep you. We're going to keep you because you're one of our own. We're the guy that we drafted you. You're one of our own. You're not a free agent. You're one of our own. You're our homegrown player. And any organization that you look at in football, even players who didn't pan out, eventually they panned out. Look at my man who now is for the 49ers who played for Missouri. Smith was a bust.
Who are you talking about?
Smith. He plays for Niners now. He got drafted drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals.
He was a Pro Bowler in Cincinnati.
No, at the end. No,
he was a Pro Bowler.
Brian Arakpo made a Pro Bowl. So what are you talking about?
Brian Arakpo. Let's be clear. Brian Arakpo was an alternate.
No, Brian Arakpo made a Pro Bowl without being an alternate. He made a couple years. He made 2-3 Pro Bowls. If you want to be 2 Pro Bowls, be real with it. Okay. If you're going to say it, be real with it. So Brian Arakpo made 2 Pro Bowls. Smith in Cincinnati, and you can look it up, was a bust for 2-3 years. They were patient with him. Why? Because he was their own. Eventually, he got it and got good. To a point where he got to a contract year, decided to leave and go to San Fran. But he was known as a bust for 3 years. Truth be told, he was better in San Fran than he was in Cincinnati. But he was their own. So they was like, we're going to keep you. We're going to work you out. And eventually, we're going to see what's going to happen. They trusted him. It worked out for him. But eventually, he got better.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're looking at
But you just proved my point, though.
No, you proved my point.
No, listen. He was a bust for those years. When his rookie contract was up,
yeah.
He left They allowed him to leave and go to San Francisco.
Yeah, because they allowed him to leave.
Yes, yeah. So you just proved my point.
They allowed him to leave.
So you just proved my point.
He got more money. It was all this more. Wasn't they allowed him to leave? They didn't want him to leave.
This
he
is
got
the
more money.
Okay. What you're saying, and you just said, you're contradicting yourself. Because
I'm
you
not
just,
contradicting
listen,
myself.
Listen. This, I'm telling you what you just said.
All right, go ahead.
You
go
said
ahead.
That Arakpo was going to get paid that money on the open market,
hey, George,
right?
Hey, George, hold on. George, you still there?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for the call. We're just going to take this conversation elsewhere.
No, but
right, no problem. It's always a pleasure to listen, and I'll keep on listening and just keep up the good work.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate your support.
All right.
But you just
go ahead, go ahead,
but you just backwardsly proved my point.
No, I didn't. Go ahead.
Yeah, you did.
No,
if you listen, listen.
Right now.
Okay, so I'm gonna start. You said that Arakpo was going to get that money on the open market, so you just gave him that type of money for 1 year, right? So Cincinnati with Justin Smith was a bust. For those years, his rookie contract was up. They let him. They allowed him to leave because he was going to get more money somewhere else. Correctly, correct.
Yeah,
Arakpo was going to get that money somewhere else. Why didn't you allow him to leave?
Because
so you
want,
just proved my
no,
point.
No, because you didn't want to happen. Like, all right, look at that situation.
It's but do you under, but do you understand? You just proved
I, no,
my
no,
point.
No, I know you didn't. No, I didn't. Because you said they allowed him to go. I'm gonna tell you what they didn't allow him to go. They like look at the Redskins situation. If you compare it to that, if you see that, you're observing, right? Justice Smith leaves his organization. Leaves his organization, right? Goes elsewhere and looks good. Washington observes that. I believe you observe that as another football team. You'll be like, nah, it's dumb. I should keep my own. Because truth be told, in San Fran, if Cincinnati had that Justice Smith, that's in San Fran, that D be more stout. That D would be one of the better D, like would be a shutdown defense.
Sometimes
I'm saying
the smart teams allow you to roll. They're going to say, hey, you haven't done it for us for 5 years.
So Cincinnati is a smart team?
They've been to the playoffs last 3 years. They're doing something right.
I'm saying
they're doing something.
Are they doing
something better than Washington's doing?
Are they better than San Fran?
No.
Because that's the team you let them go to.
Yeah, but
I'm not comparing to Washington. I'm comparing to San Fran.
No, but this is what I'm saying.
That's what I'm comparing to.
Your team is not a smart team.
No, my team.
Your team is not a smart
team. My team is doing things the smart way now. That's the thing. You're looking off.
You can't say that because you're not getting you. If you're doing things the smart way, then the results will show with your record.
No, it's not showing in the record. No, I'm going coaching.
It's not showing in the record.
That's coaching to me. That's coaching to me. That's not with the talent on the roster. That's coaching to me. If you want to be real with it.
So if you're saying
I'm talking they're doing the smart things in terms of evaluating talent. I feel like what they're doing with talent, they're smarter than they were 2-3 years ago easily. Because they're getting more of a buck for they're getting better players
and
a cheaper rate.
I don't think smart's the right word to use.
I think they're being more
stringent with paying their talent. Yes, you can definitely say that. You can't say smart because if it's smart, the results will show.
This team was a playoff team.
What team's a playoff team?
They won the NFC East, right? 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
All right, so I'm saying, so they're improving. They're improving compared to where they were before.
How can they improve when 3-13 last year? You're starting off 1-5.
Your starting quarterback was injured for the whole year. Peyton Manning was out for the Colts.
But this is the thing. If you're doing it smart, then you have depth on your roster.
Peyton Manning
and you
was
will
out
win.
So the Colts are the Colts are a bad team because once their quarterback is out, they can't win.
Everybody knows that team was built around Peyton Manning. That defense was built. With small DNs
totally
to get
agree.
After the passer because
agree.
We all knew that Peyton Manning would get them the lead and that would allow Robert Mathis and Dwight Freeney to go after the passer. Now, when they didn't have a situation where a quarterback that can put them in the lead, now we saw what that defense did. The defense was small. You could run on the defense. It didn't have superior talent because you spent all of that money on Peyton Manning.
I totally agree. So when some of the Colts, lose Andrew Luck, are they a deep team? Could they win out Andrew Luck?
They have Matt Hasselbeck. They'll at least be 500.
Can they win out Andrew Luck?
Yeah.
No, they can't.
They can win easily 7 or 8 games.
Not without Andrew Luck.
With Matt Hasselbeck?
Not with Matt Hasselbeck. No.
With Reggie Wayne?
Matt Hasselbeck, the same. The one I saw? This Matt Hasselbeck.
Okay.
Not with this Matt Hasselbeck.
They'll be a 500 team. They'll be closer to 500 than Washington.
Nah, I don't think so. They'll be just as bad.
Okay. I mean, it's all opinion, you know.
Yeah, it's all opinion. That's what we do.
Yeah, it's all subjective. It's all subjective. Me personally, I think if you were to take Andrew Luck away from that team, they would go 6-10, 7-9, with a possibility of 8-8.
You take Angelo from that team, they go 3-13, 4-12. In my opinion, that defense is other than, I mean, I like Davis, Vontae Davis. There's no running game. Andrew Luck, he mans the run game. Truth be told, there's no real run game. He's the pass. He is the threat. Hasselbeck has to be on top of his game every week to get a W. We're talking about games, but this team ain't even rushing for 100 yards.
True.
And if Hasselbeck ain't dominating the game, where's he gonna lean? You can't say, okay, I'm gonna lean on the running game if it's not getting effective.
Hasselbeck is serviceable.
You think? Hey, a lot of people thought other backup quarterbacks were serviceable. Once you're a starter, it's totally different, man.
Yeah, but Hasselbeck's a guy who's done it in this league, though. He's taken a team to a Super Bowl.
When he was at a high level.
Yeah,
to be honest with you, Hasselbeck is effective in a particular offense. Andrew Luck doesn't run that same offense that Hasselbeck ran to be effective. They don't run the same offense.
They don't, but I think with Hasselbeck, you'll at least be 6-10, 7-9. And can sniff 8-8.
You would have to get a new offensive coordinator for that to happen, to be honest with you. Because in the West, they don't run the West Coast offense for the Colts. They don't run that.
They don't.
They don't run the Mike Holmgren offense. That's what Hasselbeck's effective.
Mm-hmm. So everyone has their opinion. Yeah. I think that.
And you're allowed to have your opinion.
Yeah, I still think that team would be closer to 6-10, 7-9 with the pieces that they have around now than what you have in Washington.
Hey, that's good you think that.
Okay.
I don't think that.
Okay. I mean, the season's going to play out.
The season's going to play out.
We'll have this conversation at the end of it.
Yeah, eventually when RG3 gets back, whenever he decides to come back, I just mean you get a true assessment of what's going to happen. You get a true assessment. And we'll see how it is.
I mean,
when he comes back,
if this organization was doing things smarter, like you said, you would have the depth and you would be competitive.
Well, let's be real though. A part of that situation is what was screwed with the whole money cap, even the salary cap thing too. So
you don't have that situation this year, though. I'm talking about this year.
It plays its part. That money would still be allocated to other things, though. It's still regardless. It still would build a team.
Or you could use that $11 million you gave Rakpo for something else.
The players we try to get. All right, for instance, the players that you're referring to, the players we did try to sign, they signed for higher money. Like we tried to get the mentor from Carolina. Was it mentor for Carolina?
Mike Mitchell.
Mitchell, I'm sorry.
You could have used that $11 million that you, part of that $11 million you paying Rakpo and signed him.
Nah, because he got hired. He got more than he was supposed to get. He was too expensive.
But this is what I'm saying. If you didn't have a Rakpo, $11 million.
No, I'm including that. I'm including the Rakpo joint. I'm including it. I'm not knocking. I'm actually including it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So
I think this organization wanted to go cheap.
It's okay. Nothing wrong with being cheap. I ain't mad at it because I feel like I get
as this. A fan, you should be.
Because I've done this.
Should be upset.
I've done the spending. I'm cool with it. I'm done with spending. I'm done with spending. I want to.
But this team, this organization does things smarter, so they would have spent the money smarter.
No, they will. Next season, we'll draft right. We'll get it. We'll go where I need. Where I need to draft. Which okay. I do know. We'll get the cornerback.
Okay.
We'll get a cornerback in the draft. We'll get the safety.
Still need a pass rusher. Still need a right tackle.
No, I need Kerrigan. We got Kerrigan. Moses will be the right tackle. He'll be the starter.
If he can't beat out Columbus the way Columbus is playing,
all right, let's be real. Just because Columbus, he may be better than Columbus for real.
Columbus is a turnstile.
Yeah, exactly. So you just let Moses learn how to play the position the way he needs to. He's going to be physical. He needs to get more technique in terms of pass pro. But his run blocking skills is vicious to me. Pass pro, totally different situation.
Last time I checked, the best way to learn is by doing something.
Hey, not all the time. Aaron Rodgers was on the bench for how long?
Like 4 years.
And look at him now. Not all the time. It doesn't happen all the time, man.
I mean, certain positions.
Exactly.
Quarterback, yeah. I truly believe playing quarterback and outside of quarterback, I think that's the only position that you better yourself by sitting on the bench. Any other position, you got to get out there, get your hands dirty.
Anyway, let's go to some other topics real quick. I'm about to end this Redskins topic because we actually went over.
Oh, okay.
I was going to ask about RG. Well, we already talked about RG3.
The Savior, Black Jesus?
Yeah. I used to call him Black Jesus. But I don't want to say it anymore because I don't want God to get me. But RG3, he's aiming to play in that Cowboys game.
If I was him, I would sit out until week 11.
What's week 11?
I don't know, but I'm still sitting out.
Yeah.
I will be your savior. I will let Kurt royally F things up, and then I will come in on my white horse in week 11 and be the savior. And then after, when the season's over, I'm going to say, hey, Dan, hey, Bruce, pay let's me. Talk to let's talk about this contract.
You know, that's smart. That's smart. Money-wise, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Sit out till week 11, then I come in on my white
RG3,
horse.
Yeah, if I was RG3, I would sit out.
And I'd be the savior.
Yeah, if I was RG3, you know what, truth be told, if I was RG3, I would screw this whole fan base.
Me too, I've been hearing what you're saying.
Yeah,
you think Kirk Cousins is your guy? Okay, let him be your guy. And guess what? I'll come in on my white horse in week 11. I'll be your savior, and then you really appreciate me. And all of you fans that are ungrateful will shut the hell up.
Oh, no, I'm with you. That's one thing I agree with, but we finally agree. Damn, darn it. Took us a while, right?
Yeah, it took us half a show. Yeah.
We tending to agree a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. But nah, if I'm RG3, I'm saying screw all you little Kirk Cousins fans, and I'm sitting out for a while. And then I'm not going to even – like towards, and then I'm not gonna give you the bargain price. I'm gonna get you like, yeah, you're gonna pay for me.
No, yeah, you're gonna pay me. I'm not taking that Colin Kaepernick contract. No,
you're gonna pay me. Screw that.
Bare minimum, you're gonna give me $45 million guaranteed at about 17, 18 per year.
What happened? Kirk Cousins start playing well though. You try to beat the process.
Hey, no, I mean, you know, because to me, just personally, he hasn't shown that consistency. Even if, all right, we're we in week 7 now?
Yeah.
Okay, so he plays good for 4 weeks. You can't erase the past of everything else he's done.
That's true. But I'm pretty much done with this. We got to go commercial break because this segment went over anyway. Want to talk about the Titans real quick? Titans? The Titans doesn't even matter.
Well, I want to talk about it for a little bit.
All right, so go ahead. Talk about Titans real quick.
No, I just think that if you lose on Sunday, the stadium's going to be dead. I think coming into the game, the stadium's going to be dead anyway.
Yeah, because you're 1-5.
Yeah, so you're 1-5. I think it's going to be like that Chiefs game last year.
Oh, Chiefs are a better team, though, than Titans.
No, I mean just the fan base.
Oh, yeah.
During the Chiefs game and then that Giants game when it was pathetic.
Mm.
I think that the scene's been set. That's how the crowd's going to be come Sunday. Well, it's going to be pathetic. No, not a lot of people ginned up ready wanting this game.
No, I agree. They should be really mad at this team and this organization for what's going on. I should be mad at Jay Gruden. I'm really mad at Jay Gruden.
Why are you mad at Jay?
Because
I think some of his press conferences are hilarious.
I think he's funny. I'm gonna be real. I like Jay Gruden. I like his personality.
Me too.
I think he has a great personality.
I think he has the type of personality to be a coach in this town.
He has
the confidence to stir things, to know that, hey, I think that I'm doing the right things. We're gonna continue down this path. We'll make adjustments as needed. But all of y'all, it's not getting to me.
Yeah, I truth be told, I think he can stall time. Like, he's the type of coach to me that even if he has a bad record for a while, his personality's so cool.
Oh yeah,
you wouldn't be asked for him to get fired. You wouldn't ask for him to get fired as quick as other coaches. Like Shanahan, it's because his personality was off.
And then on top of that, the guy has a guaranteed 5-year contract.
Yeah, so he's good.
He's good.
He good.
Even if he gets fired, he's still seeing all of his money.
He's getting that money. But for me, for this game, the Titans game, I think the Redskins should they gotta make some big moves. Like they should bench players, pull people off the practice squad. Like I play Phillip Thomas, the kid who's always been hurt. I play him in safety because Ryan Clark sucks. You seen the little beef he had with Jason Reed too?
Yeah, Ryan Clark. I like him as a person.
Yeah, he's a great person.
Very well spoken, articulate, speaks his mind.
Articulate? Why you gotta say he's articulate? Because he's black.
No, it's not because he's black. It's because he's an athlete.
Yeah, got you. All right, cool. There we go. That's better. you know what I mean, though, right?
Yeah. When people want to say nice things about a black person, oh, he's so articulate.
Like, get the hell out of here.
But no, I think, you know, what you call him, you should have never let him walk out of the door to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, the first time.
I think he's on a year or maybe two from now. I don't know what his contract is. He's probably, if he's smart, he's going to collect all of that money if he signs to next year and then retire. But he's on his last leg.
Yeah, I agree.
He gives tremendous leadership, but yeah, he's on his last leg.
He's a leader. I'll give him that much. But anyway, it's time for a commercial break. Wrong phone. Excuse me. Time for commercial break. When we get back, we'll be talking about the NFL. We'll talk about the Dallas Cowboys. Are they the best team in the NFC? It's the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
My life is full of statistics. Thing is, I could have dropped out of school and become one myself, but I didn't, because I had people that believed in me. Here's another statistic. 7,000 students drop out every school day. That's one every 26 seconds. It's time that students know that we believe in them.
Inspire a student and share your message of support at boostup.org.
We're back from commercial break. Will T, Wally O had a nice little riveted discussion about the Redskins.
I mean, it's a conversation that's grounded. Anything that's grounded in respect isn't going to be.
Of course, nobody respect anybody in this joint. Nah, never that.
Nah, I mean, because, you know, like, we're fans, we're both passionate. It's like, you know, when you go to, like, a barbershop or you go to a bar. Yeah, when people don't agree, have conflicting views on sports, sometimes it tends to get
heated
and disrespectful. Nah, we got anything grounded in respect, you know, even if you don't agree.
We got too much respect for each other. That ain't going to never happen. That's going to never happen. Never. But anyway, it's the Urban Sports Scene. Again, our phone lines are open. The number's 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. Let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys. Pedro, this is for you, homie. You've been asking about me to talk about the Cowboys, giving y'all credit. But I'm actually going to give you credit. The Cowboys shocked the world and beat the Seattle Seahawks, which, like, annoyed the hell out of my weekend. Because, as you know, I'm a diehard Skins fan. And the worst feeling in the world is, for one, the Cowboys to win, and for two, the Cowboys to win when they're not supposed to win. I guess I do have a third one. The Redskins lose too, so it's like the worst feeling.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a triple whammy for you, because your perceived arch rival is on top of the league, and you're at the bottom of the division.
Exactly.
Then
I
you have
said that though. It's cool though.
Yeah, and then you have, and then they have probably the biggest win that they've had in the last 5 years because of they beat the defending Super Bowl champions. Not just beat them, but went to their home.
They went to their home and beat them. When they have nightmares,
yeah,
you know what I mean.
So I mean, that's like the that's like the triple whammy.
Triple whammy. It's like going, I don't know, it's like going to Atlantic City and hitting every table up and then still catching that L. Like, it feels bad, you know?
Well, I mean, I'm not a big gambler.
So. Oh, I'm a very big gambler.
We know that.
Yeah, exactly. And I got so drunk. Like, I can say drunk. I got so drunk, like, on, what was it? Where we went?
We went Sunday.
Sunday, yeah. Mm-hmm. So drunk on Sunday, you know, after the Redskins lost and the Cowboys. Then, you know, obviously Cowboys won. So I had, like, 4 Darth Vaders. Yeah, that's in a place called Jasper's. Y'all
no free publicity. No free. Man. No okay, free publicity. You're right, man. This place, we don't get free drinks there.
We don't. We should though.
We should.
Maybe we should do a show there and we can get free drinks.
We should think about. That's a great idea.
We should do a show at Jasper's so I can get free drinks. I think they would do it too.
I think they would go for it too.
They got the fat manager, like the big fat dude. I'm not a big fan of him. He tried to stiff me with a bill once.
I'm not talking about that guy. That is my partner in crime, Wally Ola.
Ninja tried to stiff me with a bill. I never forget that joint, that thing in my life. But anyway, I'm gonna say it again. I'm gonna phrase the question like I said before the break. Are the Cowboys the best team in the NFC?
No, we had this discussion Sunday night. I don't think they're the best team in the NFC, just because if you look at all three facets of the game, offense, defense, and special teams, I think there's one team that in the NFC that has been, I'm not going to say consistent or even played at the highest level, but you know that one aspect of it that's kind of not playing up to par will certainly come up to speed, and I think that team is Philadelphia. That defense is playing lights out over the past 3 weeks. The special teams, they almost blocked another kick last week. And then offensively, LeSean McCoy is starting to get it going. Darren Sproles, you're lucky you have that bye week this week so he can rest up that sprained MCL. Jeremy Maclin's been a dog this year. Zach Ertz has been big time. You got Brett Celek. You got Jeffrey Matthews. You have the ninja killer, Riley Cooper. So, so I mean, that team, you know, Nick Foles, definitely not going to say he's a franchise quarterback, but he's been playing on par with, he's been playing at a fairly high level. So I think that team's the best team in the NFC. And plus, we all know that Dallas can't really be judged until mid-November and December. Because we all know of their collapses that they routinely go through.
So, see, for me, I like to think of – then the Cowboys are up there. I won't lie to you. I rank the 49ers, and the 49ers did go to Dallas, and they beat the Cowboys. So, obviously, to me, they're over the Cowboys. So, I have the Niners at one. I have the Cowboys actually at two. I have the Eagles at three and Seahawks at four at the moment.
Give me your top five.
Top five. So I said the.
You said
Niners.
Niners.
Cowboys.
Eagles.
I said the Eagles.
Eagles.
Seahawks. And let me put the. And no, know what? I take. Let me switch that right now because I'm just giving respect. Cardinals then Seahawks.
Okay. I'm gonna go with Philadelphia at number one.
And Arizona could be
San Fran.
Arizona could be two.
Yeah, San Fran at number two. Dallas at number three. Arizona number four. Seattle at number five. And I don't think the Cardinals are going to be able to sustain.
Yeah.
Only reason they've been this successful is because they don't turn the ball over on offense. They don't have any interceptions. You see offensively where Carson Palmer, that running game has had mixed results at best. Michael Floyd has been playing really good. Larry Fitzgerald had his first touchdown against Washington this past Sunday. John Brown's a pretty good young slot receiver. So they have some pieces, but to me it's all about that running game and that quarterback. Is Carson Palmer going to F up the church's money?
Yeah. Can you trust that arm?
Yep.
Can you trust that arm? That arm, it wasn't spectacular against the Redskins. The Redskins just made him look good. So when they play a good defense, what's going to happen? And that's the one thing, even though if you look at the Cowboys, they're doing their defense a big service by just running the ball, because that defense still isn't really that good.
No,
but they stay on it. But they stay on the field though. Like that offense stays on the field with DeMarco Murray, so they don't have to. A potent offense won't see that defense, but so many times. I mean, Jason Garrett, you know, has actually done a great job in changing his philosophy and making his team more of a run oriented team. It's easy, you know, obviously. You know, Romo being a prolific passer, you know, regardless of what we all like say about Romo, you know, being turnover prone, he's a guy who throws for a bunch of yards. And then to subtract that and say, you know what, we're just going to focus on DeMarcus Murray, I got to give him credit. Because you got Witten, Dez, and Romo, you would think, yeah, I want to throw the ball around.
Well, it's working now, but we've already seen Jerry Jones, he's kind of starting to put his blueprint, put his fingerprints on his team. He stated that, I don't think we should run DeMarco Murray as much. So now you see Randall get carries this past game. So it all boils down to the point of when Jerry decides to wake up one morning and go on Dallas radio waves and say, you know what, we're paying Tony Romo $55 million guaranteed with $100 million contract. We need to put the ball in his hand for him to win. Or he says something subliminally like, we need to go down the stretch run. We're going to really need Tony Romo to win games for us. Then you know the game plan is going to change, and then we'll see Dallas's true colors.
Yeah, we're going overtime in the Urban Sports thing, so just bear with us. It's going to be a while.
Yeah.
I mentioned Jason Garrett. I mean, though I don't – well, let me go back to that. I don't think he has that control. I think he's kind of stepped back a little bit. I know he does a lot of talking, but I think Jerry Jones has stepped back just a little bit.
Jerry Jones is not going to allow this team to be successful and not get the credit for it. I'm sorry. It's just not going to happen. It will not happen.
The O-line. They got to change the O-line philosophy.
Well, his son had to convince him into drafting Zach Martin and not taking Johnny Football.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, he's listening to his scouting department and, you know, the people that he's employed and empowered. But it just comes down to, we all know Jerry Jones has a big ego, and whatever success this team has, he wants his name on Front Street for it.
Well, I agree with that.
So it's only a matter of time before he goes on Dallas airwaves and says, well, Tony Romo's our guy. Tony Romo is the leader. We really need Tony to win some games for us. And then next thing you know, we're in the middle of November, heading towards the beginning of December, and it all might collapse.
Well, we'll see. All right, let's go to Jason Garrett real quick. Is Jason Garrett at this point in time a lead candidate for Coach of the Year?
Yeah, because no one – that defense was historically horrific last year. You bring in – you made the decision to bring in Rob Marinelli to improve it a little bit. You know, it's almost like you sprayed – Izzy Miyake on a skunk, and it's working so far. So, yeah, he deserves it. He deserves to be in the running for Coach of the Year.
All right. I agree. Again, Pedro, I'm giving your Cowboys a lot of credit. Yeah, I agree. Jason Garrett should be – he's lead candidate for Coach of the Year. He's the biggest it's the biggest change. I mean, a lot of folks had the Cowboys being one of the worst teams in the NFC East, to be honest with you. When you looked at it before the season started, folks were saying like this defense was going to be so bad. You were losing. You lost Sean Lee. You know, you lost DeMarcus Ware.
You lost Hatcher.
This defense was going to be terrible. And look at it now. I mean, look at them now because they changed their philosophy. The defense isn't as bad. They've done this is actually a good coaching job. You know what I mean? Like he's done a good coaching job.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's not like okay, the talent dictated what you know. What his coaching job has done, he has dictated it. He has dictated this team to be a well-oiled, not say complete team, but a winning team.
But the telling sign of him will be, I want to see him in more of those big games. You lost against San Fran. You beat Seattle.
Yeah.
I want to see you got two against Philadelphia. You still have Chicago.
You
still have the Giants.
Chicago always has that number, though, for some strange reason.
And then you also, you still have the Cardinals.
Yeah, you still have.
So you still have some pretty big games, and I want to see.
And you had the Colts.
Yep, and you had the Colts.
Yeah, the Colts. But I give them credit though, you know, because I said the same thing. Like they need to win a big game. They won a big game in Seattle, so I can't go back and say
But to me, I want consistency.
You want
I
want
to see. I want to see how you. Yeah, I want November. I want November and December.
Yeah, you want November, December. Right now, for me, it's just I can't say anything right now because I'm like shocked. They beat Seattle. I don't look at the Cowboys. I never look at the Cowboys as a team that could beat good teams. At this point, even watching them play this season, when they were beat like St. Louis, the Titans. I was like, oh, I'm beating some sorry teams. But when they beat the Seahawks, like I was like, wow, okay, I can't say that they can't beat anybody. Because anytime you can go into Seattle and beat Seattle, that's impressive.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit up here, but I want consistency. Oh, I want to see how you perform during those big games.
Well, I want to see what's going to happen when somebody totally shuts down DeMarcus Murray. Because it's going to happen. Somebody's going to totally shut him down.
Absolutely.
Where do they go? Like, well,
Romo. You go to Tony.
Yes, I'm waiting on that. But see, my confusion is like where I'm confused at is like how come no one is like putting like eight in the box and just trying to stop him? Just see how it works.
Because you have Dez on the outside.
But right now, they win.
And Terrence Williams can stretch the field.
He can.
Yeah.
It's a potent offense.
It's a potent offense.
So, anyway, looking at DeMarco, it's been sliced, DeMarco Murray. Can this dude get 2,000 yards? I think he had like 100 yards every game.
No. He hasn't shown that he can consistently take a pounding and stay healthy. Even though that offensive line is playing very nasty. Probably the most physical offensive line in football now. I'm a huge fan of consistency. I think, like I've always said, greatness is performing at a high level over a consistent time period. Mm-hmm. And six games, yeah, that's impressive. That's, you know, this is the best the hottest streak you've had during a six-game stretch. I don't think it's no coincidence it's during a contract year.
Yeah.
But I don't think 2,000 yards because people will start to focus on more on taking away the run and saying, Romo, beat us. Earn that contract.
Earn that contract.
Yep.
My man Pedro was like, mentioned Beasley. I'm not going to mention Beasley. Beasley doesn't intimidate me. But Witten, yeah, I'll give you Witten because Witten is the slowest tight end to ever get open.
Yeah, how does he do it?
I don't know. He doesn't because look like
he – Yeah,
And it doesn't even like his route running looks like – I mean, his route running obviously has to be good. But even when I see him run routes, I'm like, it's slow. Your moves are slow.
Yeah, he's just savvy getting open. I don't know what he does.
No, it works out for him.
Yeah,
for me, I'm anytime I watch him play, I'm amazed. I'm amazed at Jason Witten. It's like he's the slowest tight end ever. Like, I thought, I guess I thought the same thing about Chris Cooley, too. Remember Chris
Yeah,
Cooley?
I was just about to say his
I
name.
I thought the same thing about Chris
Cooley.
Chris Cooley
routinely got open in the middle of the field. Yeah,
but he was just slow as molasses, just like Jason Witten. But he gets yards, though. I never get it. Anyway, let's go to the Ravens real quick. Ravens beat up on Tampa. Joe Flacco had like 5 touchdowns within a minute.
Yeah, he had, he had 5 touchdowns within 16 minutes of time, of actual time. That's
Is Joe Flacco you like would an think, elite now? Is well, he like elite to you now?
I'm not going to say he's elite.
Season. He's
having, I think, with Gary, we all know that Gary Kubiak's a very good coach of quarterbacks. He's starting to put Flacco in a position to be successful. Flacco has multiple weapons now, and, you know, he has Jacoby Jones, he has Torrey Smith, and he has Steve Smith, who's, you know, found a fountain of youth. And then you also throw on top of that Owen Daniels and the three-headed monster they have at running back. So he has some weapon, and he's trusting in his teammates and isn't trying to go out and do it on his own.
Yeah, I'm going to give credit. Like, I do believe that Kubiak is one of the main reasons why Flacco's been so successful. But I believe, too, that the addition of Steve Smith has been, like, great for him.
Huge.
Steve Smith, because now, if you look at from last season, they used the kid from, Brown, right? Marlon Brown and Torrey Smith. And Doss and Torrey Smith. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, you know, Torrey Smith was the number one. And you had Marlon Brown trying to be the number two. Now you had Steve Smith, who's a real number one. Like, no knock on Torrey Smith, but Steve Smith is a real number one. That's a dog. You know what I mean? You got to, you know, Steve Smith. And now Torrey Smith is going to see the lesser cornerbacks. You know, he was beating number ones, beating number one cornerbacks. So you have Torrey Smith and Steve Smith. There's no break. And then you get to even have Owen Daniels as your back. I mean, Owen Daniels is now your starting tight end because of Petta went out. Owen Daniels, who was real impactful in with Houston. I mean, this team's has weapons.
Well,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. Also, with Steve Smith, he gives you something that you had been missing when Anquan Boldin left and went to San Francisco. He gives you a guy who will go over the middle, and Flacco knows a guy who's going to go and get the ball,
yeah,
whether he's on outside of the numbers or he's within the hashes.
And that's the thing that's what's vicious about Steve Smith. Steve Smith is, like we said earlier before, I think maybe on a prior show, he's versatile. He can go deep. He can beat you on a 9, and then he can just run the route. You know what I mean? And that's one thing about Steve Smith. Steve Smith is just a beast out there. But anyways, go to the Steelers and the Browns. Steelers lost to the Browns. Got blown out by the Browns. Like, blown out.
Mike Tomlin's one of my favorite coaches in the NFL. It's not looking good for him. It's either him or he's got to let Todd Haley go. And realistically, Haley wasn't even the guy he wanted to hire. Haley was a Rooney hire.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, if you're the Rooneys, you got to make a decision. And if Tomlin, you got to go to the Rooneys and say, I want to let him go because obviously it's not working out.
I'm gonna say this much though. You know, I like Tomlin. Mm-hmm. I like his passion. I was talking to Ray. Me and Ray were talking on the phone. Ray's going to be on the show next week, too. Ray Rogers will be back on the show. We'll be on the Urban Sports scene next week anyway. But, and to me, he should be fired. My fear about Mike Tomlin is he's got bravado. I like his bravado. I like that, you know, he holds his team, his players accountable. He does. He really does. But, and it, to be honest with you, he was working off of Bill Cowher's team. You know what I mean? So it's like, as those players gotten older, and without bringing in an influx of young talent, he's still working off that team, and that's why I feel like they're struggling a little bit.
Well, then, if you're talking about the talent, that's not on him. That's on Kevin Colbert in the front office.
That's true.
That team is in salary cap hell because they always kept pushing money towards the back end for veteran players to keep veteran players. Now, although they started to bring in new blood and reinvigorate that roster, but it's just that I don't think you can fairly assess
Mike Tomlin
and say it's all his fault when they're a salary cap hell and they kept around guys for too long that they shouldn't have.
But you know what? Cause this thing, like, for me, like what does Mike Tomlin do for this team? Like, Dick LeBeau is the defensive coordinator. Mike Tomlin's a defensive guy. Dick LeBeau runs that defense.
True.
So I always think to myself, like, all right, and he comes from a cover two background. He doesn't even come from a 3-4 background. It comes from a cover two background.
Yeah, but it's you can play cover two. It doesn't, if we see Lovey, 3-4-4-3, so that doesn't make any difference.
But he's coming from the Tampa 2 system, which is totally different from a 3-4.
Well, nah, if you look at it at the baseline of what it is, he comes from the Tampa 2, which is a cover 2 scheme. Dick LeBeau runs a zone blitz cover 2 scheme. Mm-hmm. The only difference is within Pittsburgh, it's a 3-4 defensive front opposed to a 4-3 where he was used to. Mm-hmm. And now they do more zone blitzing. But if you look at fundamentally, they do a lot of the same thing. It's just that the outward appearance of it being a 3-4 versus a 4-3 is different.
Got you. What was, I mean, I want to keep his job, but to me, I mean, I do have my own little thought process about Mike Tomlin. I'm like, okay, is he really a great coach, or is he off of Bill Cowherd's team? You know what I mean? So to me, it's always hard to judge somebody like that, because obviously Barry Switzer won a championship off of, you know, Jimmy Johnson. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's fair.
It's a totally fair question to ask, and I think a lot of people in Pittsburgh are asking that question. But you also have to ask that question with the caveat that Mike Tomlin and that team has been in salary cap hell. They've gone out during the draft and they've brought in some nice pieces, but you know, even that with the transition of that roster, you know, it's going to take a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
So I still think that Mike Tomlin is a hell of a coach. He holds himself and his players responsible, and I don't think now is the time to get rid of him. This year is the time to get rid of him, but next year, you know, if he doesn't produce, maybe you got to start freshening up that resume, Mike Tomlin.
Well, let's go to my man, Brian. It was Brian Hoyer, starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. He's playing well. That means like money's coming. Ka-ching, ka-ching.
Yeah, he's doing that.
The money sign. What does that mean for Johnny Football?
It means Johnny Foot. Same thing it meant for Aaron Rodgers. It means Johnny Football. Realistically, what he has, a first rounders have what, a 4-year contract with a 5-year team option. You could realistically sign Brian Hoyer to a 3-year contract, a 2 or 3 year contract, mm-hmm. and still have Manziel on the hook. And then when it comes to Manziel's 4th year, see how he's progressing and make a decision to let Hoyer walk. But I think you're making a huge mistake if you let Hoyer walk at this point, because he's shown that, A, he's won that quarterback job, that starting quarterback job. B, that offense, for all the lack of talent that it has on the outside, has looked really, really good with him running it. And three, and C, outside of what, Derek Anderson, when's the last time you had a quarterback that's played at a high level for Cleveland? So you gotta stick with him.
Yeah, you're right. Got to. No, I think, truth be told, I think this is the end of Johnny Football already early. I know it's premature.
Wow, you counting them out now?
Yeah. To me, football is like, you know, football, like anything, is like funny, because Brian Hoyer is not an older, he's not an older quarterback. So he's gonna, if Brian Hoyer continues to play at this level, he ain't gonna see the field, and then no one's gonna trade for him at this point in time. Because there's not a lot of people who are really a believer in Johnny Football. Maybe not a gimmick they're a believer in terms of what he can make, how much money he can make for the franchise. Because you think about it, there's teams like, to me, like Jacksonville, probably where they took him. But
Blake Bortles.
Bortles. They like Bortles, excuse me. They're not going to do it. Said the St. Louis Rams, can you see Jeff Fisher going having a Johnny Football as his quarterback, dealing with Vince Young?
No.
So, you know, if you think about it, there's not that many people that would deal with a Johnny Football. And if Hoyer is going to get this team winning games, this team hasn't won in a while. Johnny Football is a guy you can see holding the clipboard for a while.
Well, I've always, even when he was drafted, I said that was a monetary decision opposed to a football decision, because you had Teddy Bridgewater right behind him, who I think is going to be a better NFL quarterback than Johnny Manziel. So I stated I thought that was a fan/financial decision opposed to a football decision.
Totally.
And, you know, who knows how it'll pan out. Maybe Johnny Manziel gets on the field and lights it up.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not. We'll see. We'll see. But it's time for our picks, our weekly picks. Week 6 picks from last week. Colts and Texans. I picked the Colts. Will picked the Texans. The Colts won. Bears, Falcons. Will picked the Bears. I picked Atlanta. Will won that week, won that game, won his team won. Cowboys versus Seahawks, we both picked the Seahawks. Damn you, Cowboys. Can't believe it. Giants versus the Eagles. We both picked the Eagles. So we both went 2-2 that week. Week 7 picks. Let's start now. Bengals versus the Colts.
Going with the Colts.
Going with the Colts. Andrew Luck at home. This team, like, they're rolling right now. So I'm going with the Colts. Chiefs versus Chargers in San Diego. It's going to be a tough one. This is a tough one.
I'm going to go with the Chargers.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the San Diego Superchargers. They got the best quarterback in the league right now this season.
Yep.
Yeah, this season in Phillip Rivers. I'm going to go with the Chargers. Giants versus the Cowboys. I know who I'm going with.
Where is this at?
It's in Dallas.
I'm going with the Cowboys. I still think the Giants are emotionally touched up from last Sunday. Then Cruz, then the shutout. Yeah. I'm going with the Giants. I mean, going with the Cowboys.
The Giants stopped the run. They stopped the run against the Eagles? No, actually, McCoy went. Damn. My Redskins level now allowed me to pick the Cowboys. I'm going with the Giants.
Okay.
Going with the Giants. I'm going to hit a Deion joint. I believe in Eli. I don't. Niners versus Broncos.
Broncos.
Kaepernick. DeMarcus Ware. This is a tough one.
I go with the Broncos because that San Francisco secondary isn't that good. And Peyton Manning with the pump fakes, especially Cox, he likes to bite on the pump fake. So
Cox
I had
like to bite. Snap!
I knew I shouldn't have said that, but yeah, that's why I'm going with the Broncos.
I'm gonna go with the Niners. I need to pick somebody different. I'm going with the Niners in this game.
Patrick Willis is gonna be out, right?
He out.
Most likely with that toe injury.
Dang. He's out for real?
Yep.
I'm going to Broncos. All right, okay. Thanks for the information. All right, fantasy football. For week 6 fantasy picks, Will picked Brian Quick. I think he had a touchdown.
Brian Quick didn't do shiggity for me. He had one catch for 10 yards.
Oh, my God.
I put him on the bench. So.
I did. I benched Larry Fitzgerald. He fried.
Yes, he did.
I pick Larry Fitzgerald. He fried. It's so annoying. But week seven fantasy football pick. I can't pick anybody on my players because all of them are hurt.
Okay. I'm going with my team. I'm going with Bishop Shankey against the Washington football team.
That's a good pick. Yep. Everybody should get
running
out
back.
Everybody gets out on us. I would pick. But I've already picked a lot of folks on my team before, like Steve Smith. I want to do it again. So I went on a different team. The Cowboys playing the Giants. Marshawn Lynch had a good game. You know, they ain't feed the beast enough. So I think Andre Williams gonna have a good game against the Cowboys.
Good pick,
Andre Williams. So you start Andre Williams on your team. Anyway, it's time for another commercial break. When we get back,
we're doing some overtime. We're gonna talk a little bit of basketball, Wizards specifically,
and mega basketball. It's the urban it's the urban sports thing
for ages.
Yeah, dig
deuces.
Hi, this is Wally Akinso from the urban sports scene. Earlier today, I had a sit-down interview with Jim Gray, which focused on a hard decision that I had to make.
How many people know your decision right now?
In all realness, Jim, that's a dumbass question. I should smack your ass right now.
One hand or two hands?
If you keep playing, I'm going to smack you with two hands.
When did you decide?
The idea of me smacking you came about 30 seconds ago.
You still a nail biter?
Don't worry about my nails. They won't be in the way when I smack you. Don't worry about it, all right?
We've had everybody else biting their nails, so I guess it's time for them to stop chewing.
Jim, if I was you, I wouldn't worry about everybody else.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know, what's your decision?
I smacked Jim Gray.
That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
Yes, Jim, that was the decision that had me tossing and turning this morning. It was hard, but I felt that my left and my right would make an impact on your face. And I was right.
Why?
Why? That's why. You think you know? You have no idea. You don't know the decisions that anybody within the USS has to make.
Turn down for what? Hey, it's the Urban Sports Scene back again. Our phone lines are open.
We're doing overtime, people. Urban Sports Scene overtime. Usually we give you about 2 hours on our podcast or our live show, but you know, we decided to extend it a little bit today just so we can talk a little bit of basketball. We all know that basketball section of our show is dedicated to a near and dear friend of ours who left this earth far too early, Ron, nicknamed Mega. So this is the Mega NBA.
Mega NBA. And again, our phone lines are open. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. But let's get into it quick. Bradley Beal, Washington Wizards, best backcourt in the game. Bradley Beal, John Wall. Bradley Beal is out for like 6 to 8 weeks. Is it six to eight weeks?
Also, earlier today, they announced that they're picking up the fourth year option for Bradley Beal, and they're picking up the third year option for Otto Porter.
Sounds great. Good job, Otto.
Okay.
Otto Rocco, Otto Porter.
The jury's still out on Otto Porter, even though I think he has the potential to be a very good and consistent player. I'm not going to say great. He has the potential.
I think he has the potential. A good player. I never say he's going to be a great player.
Yeah, be a number three option on the team.
I never say he's going to be number one.
But Bradley Beal, that's going to hurt.
That's going to hurt.
Because you had Martell Webster, who's going through some back injuries. So you don't necessarily have a guy who's a backup number two for you. Excuse me. But you have Glenn Rice Jr., who played out of his mind during the summer league. And also has been playing good during the preseason. So Glenn Rice Jr., this is your chance to step up and show out.
And this is what I wanted to say. You mentioned Glenn Rice Jr. That's the guy who needs to step up. I feel like that's the guy who's going to need to step up. He's a shooter now. He's going to take Bradley Beal's spot in terms of being a shooter on the team. So yeah, I'm interested to see what's going to happen with the opportunity Glenn Rice Jr. is going to have and what he's going to do with it. I'm really interested. I think he's going to do some big things with it.
Yeah, and I'm also interested to see how he plays off of John Wall, mm-hmm. because we both know that Glenn Rice Jr. is a pretty good spot-up shooter. Does he bring that same consistency and element that Bradley Beal brought to the team? Some
would say that Jr. may be a better shooter than Bradley Beal.
Maybe he has the bloodline to be a better shooter, mm-hmm. but he's not a better player at this point.
No. Not by far, he's not a better player.
Yeah, absolutely. So it'll be interesting to see. Like I said, I personally can't wait for another 2 weeks until the NBA season starts. I know most people don't care until the 50th game after the All-Star break.
I don't care until Christmas. Christmas when I get ready for basketball season.
Yeah, but I'm ready to go now.
I can tell. You amped into it.
I couldn't sleep last night, so I turned on NBA TV and I watched the
Sun. How was NBA TV? How was it?
It's great.
Time's tough, son.
I watched the Suns and watched the Rockets preseason game. Eric Bledsoe looks really good. That Suns team looks like they're going to be getting after defensively in the backcourt.
I can't wait for the season, man. Truth be told, I want to see what Wiggins is going to do because that's I feel bad for that kid. He's an NBA player, but you know what I mean. Get traded
never feel bad for a guy that's making millions of dollars.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. You get traded away though.
Had the opportunity to win a championship. You had a guy who could have been a mentor to you.
Exactly.
And you could have helped bridge the next 20 years for the next 20 years.
It's a really nice situation. Yeah. Could have been a nice situation for you.
Been a great situation for Cleveland.
Anyway, let's go to Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant has an injury. So what? He's about the same thing? Is it like 6 to 8 weeks?
Possibly about 6 to 8 weeks.
About 6 to 8 weeks?
Well, no, 4 to 6.
4 to 6 weeks.
All that means is Washington's going to get a hometown discount when he hits the free agent market.
I will say this though. Russell Westbrook is happy. He gets to go ham, son.
Russell Westbrook is going to put up 30 shots a game.
Son, you're going to hear it here first. Russell Westbrook, we will be on MVP status for like that first month.
I'm not going to say MVP 2 months. Status. I'm going to say Russell Westbrook is going to lead the league and will be in the top 3 in scoring.
I think he'll lead the league in scoring. I think he'll lead the league in scoring.
He's going to lead the league in most shots. I guarantee you
that.
He'll
get his shots now.
Oh, yeah.
He'll get his shots. He'll lead the league in scoring. But I want to see who's going to take KD's spot in that situation. Hopefully, Lamb can get more playing time.
Well, they said it's going to be a combination of Lamb.
Perry Jones.
Perry Jones and Andre Robertson.
Oh, okay. Now I would like to see Perry Jones and
Lane. Yeah, I want to see Perry Jones get the first shot at it.
Yeah,
because you know he was lanky. He was a really good player in college.
High recruit, and
a lot of people thought highly of him. So I want to see how he's gonna, given the opportunity to show up and show out and be a starter and be a major contributor for the team. I want to see how he handles it.
But I do want to see Lamb get a lot of playing time. I think Lamb could be a star in this league. With the right opportunity, I think he'd be a star. Not a good player. I think he could be a star because he's smooth. He's silky smooth.
Yeah, he has that Reggie Miller element to his game.
Yeah, really does.
Reggie Miller, Richard Hamilton type of element, exactly. Coming off of the picks and shooting.
Yeah. And plus, he's got a nice floater, you know, once he goes to the basket. Yep. I like his game. I liked it in UConn, too, to be honest with you. All right. Did you see the Cleveland-Miami Heat game?
No, I didn't waste my time with that.
Why are you saying you waste your time with it? You're talking about excited for basketball. Yeah, I mean, that game was a game.
That's WWE to me.
Oh, my. You the same dude who was excited about basketball?
No, it's a game, but you know, all the back talking, that's WWE. If you really had some hostility towards LeBron, you wouldn't say it. You would just, when he comes to the bucket, you would put him on his ass. So that's why I said it's WWE. It's kind of made up to me. You know, when it counts for something, that's a game I want to see when it counts for something.
All right.
But not in the preseason. It's WWE all the time.
I heard LeBron and Kevin Love. I heard that thing.
Kevin Love showed out.
I heard that's a good mesh right now.
I mean, you think about it. Kevin Love extends the floor. LeBron likes to penetrate and get to the basket. Drive. LeBron's a willing passer.
Drives and dish.
Yep, drives and dish. So
dish.
Yeah,
dish.
So that's going to be a combination that is going to take him a little. And you know, while we're talking about Cleveland and Miami, did you hear Chris Bosh's comment? I think it's absolutely true. I don't think he said anything wrong. No, you have to learn how to play with LeBron and play off of him.
No, it wasn't the negative. He was saying that you're used to being the man. How I look at it, you're used to being the man. In Cleveland. Minnesota. Used to be in the man. He got all the shots. Same thing. Chris Bosh in Toronto was getting all the shots. And he used his body to score a particular way. Now he's not even needed to do that anymore. He's going to be a pick and pop player, period.
Yeah.
And how do you play with that? He's not saying that like LeBron's difficult to play with. He's just saying that it's different from playing. Because you know that LeBron's the best player in the world. You can't play the same way. You got to play around LeBron.
Yeah,
and that's all he's saying. That's all he said.
And you know, also to piggyback off of that, when Bosh was in Toronto, he was a back to the basket type of guy. Mm-hmm. When he got to Miami, he couldn't play. He tried to play the same way the first couple of months during that first season, and it didn't work out. That's why he lost 20 pounds, and he became a pick and pop player, or a guy who sat over in the left corner and waited for the ball to rotate or the defense to break down and get that open 3-point shot. No, I don't think there's anything wrong with what he said.
Chris Bosh was totally right when he said it. And to be honest with you, Kevin Love will fit more than Chris Bosh to be real.
Absolutely.
Because he's the pretty much there anyway.
Yep.
He's not his post game is nothing special. He's more of a pick and pop player.
Absolutely.
So it's gonna fit anyway. It meshes together. To me, I mean, now that I think about it, Kyrie Irving, that's going to be the thing to see if it meshes correctly with Kyrie.
Yeah, because Kyrie needs the ball.
Yeah.
So that's LeBron needs the ball in his hand. LeBron's not a guy that plays off of the ball.
He's done it, but he's not. It's not the same. Yeah. It's not the same.
He needs to run the offense.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, but we're about to wrap the show up.
See? Yep, it's a wrap.
It's a wrap. But to make sure you listen to us on our official Urban Sports Team website, the site is www.waleo.podbeam.com. Waleo is spelled waleo.podbeam.com. Podbeam is spelled PODBEAN. We are also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com.
Once again, we want to thank you all for giving us the opportunity to come into your living rooms or come through your iPods or come through your wherever medium you're using to listen to us. Once again, we're fans just like you. You guys are the reason why we do this. We just wanted a voice. This is our platform for our voice. And also, continue to support the world's most dangerous sports podcast, the Urban Sports Scene.
Thank you, folks. Your dick. Hey, Ronnie, Big Mega, lead us out, homie.